Blog Talk Radio.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat. The human drama of athletic competition.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis. Coach Schulteis, how you doing?
Joe, I'm coming off my carb destruction where you fall asleep after eating the turkey and all the mashed potatoes and everything. The one good thing was we got in some hoop games yesterday, which helped us exercise a little bit. But you know what? I just heard come across some news breaks before we went live. All Targets, Walmarts, Macy's, all the malls, people were leaving and running to their phone, their internets, to listen to the Coach K and Joe Show. So Black Friday is going in the red for at least 2 hours for the merchants as we start our show.
You know, that's good to hear. And, you know, we got a great promo that I'm hoping to get on soon, something about some Purdue guy. I'm a Purdue guy, I don't know anything. And what was it? Coach K knows what?
Coach K speaks the truth.
Now, I kind of wanted to get that from you because I've got a little, looking over the Twitter sphere, and I saw a tweet from you to Coach Calipari.
Yeah, yeah.
And it said, Dickie B puts the monkey on your back for the IU KY series. I'm not buying it. I say neutral court every year. I don't blame you. So are you now a Kentucky fan?
No, I'm not a Kentucky fan, and as we bring our first guest on this segment, Don Schulteis, our Indianapolis Hoops guy, he'll be coming on. We'll talk a little IU, but what that referred to is that Dickie V was on the ESPN, you know, during a game, and he was talking about, come on, John Calipari, come on! You know, go ahead and play that IU series, and he talked about Coach Cal wanted two neutral sites, and IU didn't want to do that. They wanted to meet halfway and do home and home and two neutral sites. I say play the series, play them at all neutral sites the whole time, and let's just have one of the great rivalries in basketball playing every year with no questions asked.
Well, you know, I look over the internet finding stuff, you know, and I even actually go to Pigs every once in a while. I use message board. I'm not quite sure why I do, but I do. And, you know, they said it's all Calipari. And, you know, reading Pigs also this week, you know, just between you and I, since it is Old Oak and Bucket week, I think Wilson's done a decent job. But on Pigs, they're talking about how Kevin Wilson's going to, because of the unbelievable job he's done this year, how he's going to get pulled away from a bigger school. He's beat who? Illinois.
Well, Joe, let me tell you something.
Iowa.
As we end your part of this first segment, on that note, he is being looked at Tennessee, and I would hope and keep him around. But over on Rocky Top, those mountains have gold in them, so that might be tough too. Let's move on with the show before Joe rattles my cage too much. Remember, Joe, the guy from New Jersey said, Coach K speaks the truth. And we're going to bring on Don Schulteis, our Indianapolis guy when it comes to high school hoops. And Don and his son Adam were out in New York in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center, and they took in the IU tournament in the Progressive Classic. He saw both the opening game with Georgia and then the championship game with Georgetown. Don, we're bringing you in after your flight home, some hoops before turkey time. How are we doing today, and are you ready to talk some IU hoops?
Oh, I'm always ready to talk IU hoops, Coach K, and even banter a little bit with Joe if he's got the nerve, because you know, going out to the Barclays Center, it was a fantastic trip. And IU admittedly did not play their best in against Georgia particularly, but sometimes you got to get through those tests. When you don't play your best and you're still tested, and you're able to push through to a victory. So I'm excited for IU, and I think they took another step to, you know, just get better and be at peak form in March.
Well, Donna, you know, one of the things you talked about before we actually get into some of the game insight and some of the things you were able to pick up as you watch the team and the players individually, you talked about a very electric atmosphere out in Brooklyn, that the IU faithful was out in force, that it was an electric feeling. I know that the Greater New York IU chapter had bought pre-sale 1,500 tickets. They had people from Connecticut, New Jersey, all around the area coming in. But you said it was a sea of red, and there was great enthusiasm.
Oh, the first night, I think at least 75% of the arena was red-clad with IU, not Georgia. When the team would come out or when they would do the fight song, I mean, the stadium was just, it was like a home game, believe it or not. I will say one thing about the new Barclays Center. It is a great venue to watch basketball. Every seat is a good seat. They did a great job as far as hospitality. And, you know, when you're 800 miles away from home, you don't expect to see that following. And there were a lot of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut representatives on the fan base. But I think a lot of people traveled in to see it, like my son and I. And we just had a great time. On Tuesday night, I saw that there were about 11,000 fans at the game, and I bet 8,500 to 9,000 were IU, and it was great to see the Hoosiers win the tournament. Jordy Holes earned MVP honors, and he by far was the MVP of the tournament, and Cody Zeller playing with his asthmatic bronchitis really turned it around and stepped it up on Tuesday night at 17 points and 8 rebounds. So great effort by the Hoosiers on Tuesday.
Well, you make a good point on Cody, and we'll talk about that just briefly, physically, how he was and compared to with how he played and maybe appeared. Looking at some of the other IU players, the Hoosiers, individually, you know, we weren't playing Bryant. We weren't playing North Dakota State. We were playing two pretty solid, tradition-rich NCAA teams, Division I, especially Georgetown. When you looked at our players physically, from the build, from the size, and from the quickness and speed, can you kind of give a feeling like a Yogi Ferrell? You know, Yogi's not a big kid, but he has a lot of quickness. Tell me about a couple of those freshmen. What your thoughts were and how they matched up with some of the personnel on both Georgia and Georgetown.
Well, I think both Georgia and Georgetown appeared to be more physically imposing, just, you know, thicker kids, more athletic, and maybe, I don't know their rosters in depth, but they're probably a little bit older, upperclassmen. But Yogi, from a quickness standpoint, I mean, I think he's one of the quickest in the country. I think he's got some developing to do. I think he tries to make some passes that were easily done in high school, and he's got to make them a little bit different way in college just because of the reaction and the quickness and the athleticism of the opponents. But I just think he's going to get better and better. And when he's on the floor, the speed at which IU runs the floor in transition is the best I've seen in a number of years for the Hoosiers. So I'm excited about that. I think once we get Hanner and Hanner Perea and Peter Jerkin back, those are two freshmen that are already physically imposing, and they're going to add a lot. Jeremy Hollowell, another freshman for us, he definitely has to make some adjustments. I think we're going to see him have some really great games, and I think we're going to see him struggle or go through kind of a learning process in other games, depending on matchups and things like that. But even with that said, I mean, he was still rebounding, and he gets the ball out. He just needs to work a little bit on on his moves to the bucket and just the timing and the spacing and that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm biased. I'm an alum from IU, and it's just great to see the Hoosiers back as one of the top teams in the country.
You know, Don, one of the questions going into the season, a lot of people talked about the guard tandem. Who's going to be out there? Who's going to be out there? And you look at Jordy Halls, who's just an outstanding shooter. You know, he can be streaky at times, but he's pretty consistent. Sometimes he'll take maybe the ill-advised three from about 28 feet out, but on the most in most situations, he's got the ability to drive and kick or take it to the basket and stretch that defense. But he only runs about 6 foot, 6'1" if you want to stretch. And then he got Yogi, who they listed 6 foot, but he appeared a little bit shorter than that to me. My question is, you know, a lot of people wondered, can those two guards exist out on the floor for IU throughout this season? And your thoughts when they were on the floor and when there was a different guard tandem? Well, I know that speed, that Yogi has the speed and the quickness, and sometimes speed kills, and that's part of his inexperience. But how do you rate them one and two out there on the floor?
Well, I think together, you know, they do bring a lot of intangibles. The thing that people, you look at them physically and you say, yeah, they're kind of small. They're kind of small in the backcourt, and can these guys handle it? But let me tell you, the one thing that I'm so impressed with IU in general, and particularly those two, and Jordy Halls really proved it in the two games of the tournament, they just don't stop working hard. They may make a mistake. They may, you know, end up in a turnover situation, but they just keep working. And they, and you know, coaches always talk about forgetting, learning from the last play, but moving on to the next play. And Jordy Halls particularly showed that to me in the last two games that he's played in the tournament. He moves on. And there were a number of times where he might have missed a shot, or he might have had an ill-advised pass or turnover situation, but he races down the court and ends up in the other team's transition, picking off a pass and causing a turnover on the other end, because he's not dwelling on the last play. He's moving on to the next play, and I think that's what Coach Green has been able to do for the Hoosiers. Is get them. I know one of the statistical things that he measures all the time are deflections, and I, you know, I always refer to it as being active on the court. And Jordy and Yogi, particularly, they get their hands in the lanes and they tip the ball and they make somebody hurry up, and I think that's one thing that if they can continue to do that on a night in night out basis. The Hoosiers are going to be tough to deal with. And then bringing Will Sheehy off the bench to play that guard, or moving Victor Oladipo there, and then you've got this athleticism that maybe the other two don't bring to you right away. It's just going to be hard to guard against and prepare against for the other team.
Well, there's no doubt that, and I as a coach, and I would tell people listening, younger kids and parents of kids playing, you know, you shoot that ball, it doesn't matter whether it goes in, you got to go on and play the next possession and the pieces that add up to that possession, and you have to have confidence to come back and take the shot when you have it again. You keep shooting when you're hot, and you keep shooting to get hot. But as we end this segment, Don, I've got one more, and we'll expand on this as we go on throughout the year. Maybe physically you had some concerns, you know, Zeller, Cody, but it seemed like he got lost in the offense in both games. And when I say that, I mean we came down, we started the dribble, 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 penetration, dribble, dribble, penetration, and we weren't moving the ball, kicking it in, kicking it out. I really believe that Cody Zeller has to realize this is his basketball team when they are on the court. When he is on that court, those other four guys, they're all together. It's his team to lead. And he's got to touch that ball 7, 8, 10 times out down the court, 8 of 10 times down the court, inside, outside. He doesn't have to shoot it, but he has to be a part of the ball reversal and the kick out and the high lows and those types of things.
I totally agree, and I think that that's what allowed IU to be such a good team last year and develop and progress. If we all remember Coach Crean always talking about Cody Zeller needing more touches in the games. And the games that we struggled in last year was because he didn't get those touches. And the games that we ended up really winning and making strides forward is when he is. And one example of that is Monday night when he physically looked like he was hurting, just having him on the court caused Georgia to have to do some things. And although he didn't get a lot of touches that night, just him being on the court, they had to adjust and guard him and defend against, you know, his potential. And I think that's one reason, you know, some of these guys, when they're not their 100% best, they have to be in there to play. But if we can get Zeller with those touches, as we did last year, and get him in the offense, and as you said, just inside, outside, it's not him just going to the hoop every time, it's going to help our team tremendously, and we're just going to be hard to defend.
No doubt about it. The Hoosiers get two wins out in New York. They remain undefeated, number one in the country. Great stuff, Don. Look forward to talking to you as we go forward on the show and on our shows. We've got just a great lineup, including Don. We've got Slick Weber, great Jasper basketball player from the 70s, coming up on our glory days. We've got Scott Rowland coming up to talk to us a little bit about things going on with him. Tom Dienert from the Big Ten Network will be here to talk about the Big Ten. A lot of stuff going on. You are listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I think this situation absolutely requires a really futile and stupid gesture be done on somebody's part. We're just the guys to do it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the show, and boy, I had to pause there a little bit because I got chills listening to that audio broadcast back from the regional in 72. Our next guest is a very popular former Jasper basketball player, definitely worthy of our Glory Days segment. I know when I was a little guy, there was nothing like going to the gym, watching him practice, watching him play, always had a smile on his face, always made you feel good about being around. Our Glory Days segment starts today with Dave Slick Weber. Slick, how you doing?
Great, Coach K. How you been, buddy? Appreciate the comments. Boy, I tell you what, listening to that audio with Bob Simmers on the play-by-play, boy, that does bring back some chills and some great memories, I'll say that.
Hey, I'm serious. I got goosebumps right now. And you know, we've kept that for a long time. When I was at Jasper coaching, we found that little audio of you at the line. And, you know, Bob, and we'll talk about Bob on a show in the future. What smooth poetry he was calling games on the radio. Just tremendous. But let's really hit you today, Slick. I mean, you were an exciting player and an exciting time in Jasper basketball, of course, during the one-class system. You came through in the early 70s. You were in the beginning and middle of the run of five straight sectionals under Coach Ed Schulteis. Jerry Burge was sports writer in town. Bob Simmers on the radio. Just a lot of great things were going on at that time. And I want to just, before we start talking about that, tell us a little bit about Dave Slick Weber today. A little bit about your family, what you're doing now, before we get into some basketball memories.
Okay. Currently, I've been living in Indianapolis, Coach, for about 35 years now in that area. Married a wonderful woman from Jasper. She was the homecoming queen of basketball in 1971, Adrian Grammersbacher. We have three wonderful children, two boys and a girl, and they're all married and starting their own families. I have four grandchildren, two boys, one 5, one 2, and I was just blessed with two little girls, one 3 months and one 2 months old. They were born exactly 1 month apart there in August and September. So the Lord has been good to me. I've been really blessed since day one. I could not complain about a thing. Life is great.
Well, that's great to hear, and doesn't shock me, and it doesn't shock me to hear your positive attitude, and obviously the things that have happened in your life are not just things that just happen. You play a part of it, and one of the things that was always exciting about Slick Weber was the personality. It transcended your game on the court, the smile. Yes, you were intense on the court, but you were also gracious in victory and defeat. You were gracious to the little kids around. I mean, I remember Slick Weber, he's twirling the ball on his fingers, moving them from finger to finger. I mean, those are the things that I remember, because not a lot of people were doing that. You saw Pistol Pete do that, some other people, but you didn't see a lot of high school kids do that. So you really started to bring the personality into the game. And as you look back on your time in high school, and we'll get into some of the games and the victories, what are a couple of the things that stand out about playing high school basketball and playing at Jasper and in DuBois County?
Well, Coach K, I could never be more grateful for, one, the coaches I've had in my life. I mean, starting with my 7th and 8th grade years at Holy Family, I had probably the best coach ever to live, and that was my father. And then my freshman year, I was blessed to have Don Noblett as my head coach. My JV, my sophomore year, I got Rex May. And then, of course, my 2 years as varsity player, the Silver Fox. I mean, can it get any better than that as a lineup for coaches? I don't think so. And you mentioned Bob Simmers and Jerry Burge, and I can go on and on and on about the people in Jasper and probably the surrounding DuBois County that follow basketball, but it's particularly Jasper people. It was a time in Jasper history where it just didn't get any better than that. You go to that Honeyburg sectional, and you had all those fans. It sold out. I mean, it was magical to be part of that and to be blessed with some of the success that I had. And it was, you know, the first sectional game I ever went to, Kenny, my father comes home on a Saturday night. It's 1963. I'm 8 years old. Ireland is playing Springs Valley. And I'd never been to sectional. And he goes, turns to my brother and I, goes, you guys want to go to sectional tonight? And I went, well, yeah, because, you know, you still went to the sectional back in those days, even after your team lost, because that was entertainment. So we go, and we're walking up to the gym, and we get probably 20 feet from the door. My dad looks down at me, and he goes, Slick, I only got 2 tickets. I kind of looked at him, and Dad was, you know, my dad, he was, what, 5'8", and rather a large man, and he always wore a tan raincoat. He goes, so Slick, I only got 2 tickets, so you slide underneath my raincoat here, and we're walking, and I'll just be, you know, I'll be talking to the ticket taker. He won't even know you're under my coat. Just walk in with me. So that's how I got to my first sectional game, and that is when Ireland upset Springs Valley. And you're talking about being hooked. That was hooked ever since. So it still sends chills up my spine. My hair stands on end when I start talking about Jasper basketball, because it's such a passion. And those people back in the late 60s, early 60s, 70s, when your dad was coaching there, and even through Mike Ballinger in those years, when that Huntingburg sectional was at its peak, it was just magical. It could not be beat.
Well, there's no, and you know, Slick, people, some that don't get experience it now just can't understand when we say that the place was packed, we're talking packed to the door, and I'm sure you weren't the first or the last to get under in between two adults or under a coat and sneak in, because if you were really, there were very few young kids who could get to a sectional because the adults and the students in high school had them. And as you think about that, I really want to make sure that we cover one piece, so I'm going to jump ahead on you, Slick, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to jump ahead to that. I'm going to jump ahead to that 72 regional.
Okay.
I'm going to jump ahead to that 72 regional. And Jasper's playing Ligoti, and the great coach, Jack Butcher, all-time winningest coach, and he was a great coach. I was very fortunate to coach against him as well. And you're in one. We're up one, and you get fouled with about 4 seconds left. We were up one, correct?
We were up one. Yeah, I hit a shot with about 14 seconds ago. We were down by one, and I remember this distinctly. I mean, and the crowd's going crazy. I never heard a crowd so loud. I mean, that we talking about packed. That place was packed. And we come down. We're down by one. We get the ball. It's about 20 seconds to go. And they throw it over to me on the wing. I'm over on the wing. And I throw it into Leagy. Oh, Mike Leagers, who's a sophomore, starting center. Leagy kicks it back out to me. And the Ligoti guy, who was, I think Crane was guarding me, he was off me a little bit. So I was about ready to pass it again, and I went, man, I'm open, you know. So I threw one up from about, whatever, 23, 25 feet. Fortunately, it went in. You know, Big Al thinks that he always had to rebound anyway, not to worry about it. So then we're up by one with about 15 seconds to go. They come down. Canada comes across. Brian Tanner, who was a great, great high school basketball player that should have made the All-Star team but didn't. And he comes across the free throw line, bounce passes under to a guy named Beasley. Beasley lays it in. The crowd's going wild. Well, Tom Nichols was laid on the floor. They call a charge on Canada. It was about 5 seconds to go. So the Ligoti fans are, you know, they're livid. Jasper fans are ecstatic. We're up by one, about 5 seconds to go. We call timeout, and I'm standing there in the huddle, your dad talking. And I'm going, you know, I'm not going to get the ball because they're going to make sure I don't get the ball because I was a pretty good free throw shooter. And so was my running mate, Kevin Manley. So I was like, okay. So we ran the play, and I break out, and I'm wide open. They give me the ball, and I cover up right away. And they foul me. Majority fans still think it was a jump ball, but it wasn't. And so it was about 4 seconds ago or something like that. Fortunately, I stepped up, hit two of them, so now we're up by three. And what a feeling. And then they hit a half-court shot to – which would have been tied in this day and age because it would have been a three-pointer. But we win by one. And at the end of that tape, Bob Simmers gives it the old, and the Cats win 59-58. I can still hear that because I've got that tape and I play it every once in a while.
You're going to hear it again because we want everybody to hear that last minute with Bob Simmers. So sit back and enjoy Slick Weber, David Slick Weber, getting fouled and going to the line.
Sunday, that's our show for today.
You know, it would be pretty ironic, but about 25 years later, I would be coaching Jasper against Ligoti and beat them in a championship game very similar to that, and Coach Butcher was on the sideline. But back to that moment, that feeling, I just want people to understand what that's like for a 17, 18-year-old boy in a community. There were 7,000-plus in that gym, and it wasn't over. The ride back and into Jasper to celebrate was something.
Well, you know, it was unbelievable. You heard the crowd there. The Jasper fans are so supportive. We were coming back, and I was in your father's car. The starting five was in that car. And we're coming back from Washington, and we're all excited, you know, and we can't hardly believe what happened. And so they hadn't won a regional in probably 10 years, 9 years. And all of a sudden, the traffic stops outside of Ireland, and we're just sitting there, and the coach goes, oh, it must be a wreck or something. And all of a sudden, here come cop cars. They find us. They find us in Rex's car, and they lead us into the city, and there are people lying in the street. There are people around the courthouse. It was phenomenal. I mean, it was unbelievable. And, you know, Kenny, a lot of people don't know this, and I really didn't know this until years later. We played a Friday night game and a Saturday night game for the regional. It was a two-night thing.
Yeah.
And coach never subbed either game. We played five guys Friday night and five guys Saturday night. And I asked Rex May one time, I said, why would you do that? He goes, if it's not broke, you don't fix it. So
I agree. You know, you get a lot of rotations they do today, but, man, if you're on a roll, stay with the roll.
Yeah, so it was really, but you know, I was in that gym when you won that game against Jack and whatever, 80, what year was that, Kenny, when you won,
95.
Yeah, I tell you what, there's been some great ones over the years, you know. I was talking to Joe off the air about the 75 game you guys are going to do a special on. Man, that's the greatest game I ever saw when the Jasper beat Forest Park in that triple overtime. So
that was a great one. You know, Slick, when you also played on the team the year before, which
right,
was a pretty basketball team, 1971
well,
team, great
that was
players,
a great basketball. Yeah,
great record, went into the regional and really just manhandled Linton in the semifinal game. And Coach Gary Duncan, who would end up going to Southridge and going to two Final Fours, he was at Salem, and he took the Cats out. But jump back to 71, and just for a couple minutes, talk about some of those guys you played with that year, because you had a great basketball team.
Well, you know, I was really blessed. Like I always say, I got to play with some great players. We were ranked as high as number 3 about halfway through December, and that's when, you know, there's no class, so that's everybody in the whole state. Well, you know, I had, you know, Jim Van Hyde, Gary Stratman coming off the bench, Tommy Nicholson, who was a classmate of mine, me and Jim Wenzel, Jim, you know, who's a legend in Jasper, probably one of the greatest athletes ever to come out of there. And, you know, you know, Scott Rowland, Mike Ballinger, Polly Huffman, Jim Wenzel, you know, he's in the top 5, let's put it that way. And then, of course, we had Wayne Bailey, who was just phenomenal and should have been an all-star in my mind. I've always said that. I've always told Wayne, I think he got the shaft on that one. They chose Steve Lockmuller, and Wayne always played circles around Steve. Nothing against Steve, but I just thought Wayne was a better ball player. And then, of course, we had Kevin Manley coming off the bench as a guard. We had Mike Tice, Tommy Berger, who, you know, the year after I graduated, hit the fadeaway to beat Southridge in the final game of the sectional, you know, last second shot. You know, great players, great coaching. You know, I was really, really lucky to come along when I did, because it was phenomenal.
And Slick, I knew where this segment wasn't going to last long enough, and we're going to have you back to talk more about tournament time in Jasper basketball. But before we end this segment with you, you know, the 72, you go in, you win the regional. Again, you played with some good people. Just give our listeners a few of the names you played with your senior year and just what it was like to create that bond with those guys that even today, and I know it, I've seen it, you'll still get together with Coach Schulteis. You'll still spend time together as teammates. It's just something that never ends.
Well, you know, Ed was my coach, and Rex was my assistant. At that time, Ed Yarbrough had just started. He might have been there 2 years when I was a senior, and he went out scouting for us. So, you know, that threesome right there is a pretty good threesome to start with. And then my running mate, Kevin Manley, you know, he could have asked for a better guy. You know, we shoot from 25, 20, you know, long bombs nowadays. And old Ed would always say, you know, we don't really need Weber and Manley coming down shooting 25-footers every time. But, you know, that's what we did. And you know, in the middle we had, you know, Mike Leaguer's there, who's a sophomore and went on to be a great player at DePaul. And Tommy Nicholson, Al Sang, Mike Brown, Kevin Kelly. And then, of course, you know, we had Tommy Berger and Kaish and Stan Geisler, who had a great senior year also. And those guys, you know, the year after we went to the semi-state, they backed it up and went again and almost took out New Albany, who went on to win the state. I mean, they gave New Albany a hell of a run for their money. So, yeah, I was really blessed, man. Great time to be alive. That's all I got to say.
Well, last thing before we go, 100 years of Jasper basketball is coming up. And, Slick, I know you really appreciate everything about basketball. So you've kind of jumped in, and you guys are getting together to put something together in January. Quickly, can you give us a little information about it?
Okay. This is the 100th season of Jasper Wildcat basketball. We're planning a celebration, get-together, whatever you want to call it, on January the 5th of 2013, which is coming up in about 6 weeks probably. It's going to be at the new KSC there in Jasper, Indiana. I'm trying to contact as many ex-Wildcat basketball players that we can. So if your listeners are out there, please either email me, call me. I've set up a Facebook page for it. It's called 100 Seasons of Wildcat Basketball. You can go there and become a member there, post some pictures. I know your Facebook page, Coach K, has some pictures from that great 81 final when Ballinger just went crazy. But, you know, I just set that up last night. I'm not very computer savvy, so for some mistakes in there, please bear with me. But once again, that's a Facebook page called 100 Seasons of Wildcat Basketball. They can email me at David Lee Weber with two B's at hotmail.com, or they can call me at 812-661-0555. And, Coach, if you could kind of relay that on your show every once in a while so we can get many of those great ones back here as we can, I'd really appreciate it.
Hey, Slick, we will get it done. And I'll tell you what, you're just another example of what I say is the great thing about true teammates in basketball. You keep giving. You never stop giving. And that's why you're successful, not just on the court, not just in practice, but in life. Loved having you. Keep promoting it, buddy.
I will. You know that. And, hey, anytime you want to talk some Jasper hoops, you just give me a call, and I'll be more than happy to do that.
All right, good talking to you, Slick. We're going to end this segment. When we come back, we've got Tom Dienert of the Big Ten Network. You are listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Think of your website as an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a website that doesn't produce results. Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help whip your site into shape. If you don't have a site yet, let Idea Fusion Media walk you through the entire process, from domain registration and hosting setup to the design and implementation of your site. To see how Idea Fusion Media can help you, visit ideafusionmedia.com. Again, that's ideafusionmedia.com. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you.
My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. And we, every time we think we can't get any better, we come up with yet another big name. We've got the senior writer for the Big Ten Network, Tom Dienert, on with us. Tom, how you doing?
I am doing great, Coach K and Joe. I tell you what, the season's gone quickly here. Rivalry week is upon us, and for Purdue and Indiana fans, That means, of course, one thing, the old oaken bucket.
Yeah, Tom, and I'll tell you what, that is huge. You know, I'm an IU grad, so this is a big weekend coming up for the Hoosiers, and I know it is for the Boilers, and we want to talk about that. And there's that game, and there's so many other things that we want to talk with you about, and I hope you'll give us your knowledge and your feedback and give us the information that our listeners want to hear. And because you have your fingers and your brain and your hands in just about everything going on in the Big Ten sports world, and so we're excited to have you.
Yeah, like I said, it's going to be interesting. The stakes are obviously high for Purdue. Need one more win for bowl eligibility to get to 6 victories. I tell you what, a few weeks ago, this didn't look possible. And Purdue's riding that 5-game losing streak. But again, win at Iowa, win at Illinois here, they are 5-6 with a chance to beat your rival on your home field to get to a bowl. For Indiana, you know, it'd be nice if they could end the year with a little bit of positive feeling, you know, that they looked so good there a couple weeks ago. I was in Bloomington for that Wisconsin game when, you know, they actually controlled their destiny in the leaders' division with a chance to maybe to win it. So, again, that game turned out not so good, 62-14. Of course, they lost again. But you know what? As you know, Coach K is an Indiana guy. A victory over Purdue sure cures a lot of ills, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it certainly would, Tom. And you talk about that Wisconsin game for Indiana, and I think it just showed for the hopeful Indiana fans. And I got to be honest, I was a little emotional and excited about that. I thought maybe we were ready to take the next step. But Coach Wilson, I think offensively, has some design on what we need to do. We've got to bring the defense around, but we just aren't ready to make that next step into what I call that first five of the Big Ten. But having said that, this weekend, as you said, has a lot of things riding on it. And I'm going to throw out a controversial comment just to start and just to get your thoughts, and you can politically steer it in the direction you want. But is Coach Hope on the hot seat at all? And if Purdue can't get this win over Indiana, is his future at Purdue possibly in jeopardy?
I think it's very much in jeopardy, without a doubt. If you go back to July and August, I mean, Coach Hope said it himself that this was his best team yet in his fourth season at West Lafayette, and here we are, 5-6. Is this where Purdue fans envisioned the program back in August? I would eventually say no. And even more distressing, I think, have been the crowds in Ross-Ade Stadium. Attendance has really gotten to levels where it hasn't been since the Jim Coletto era, which I know with Joe strikes a chord. And, again, you know what? On top of all that, then, too, you look at the resume. Victories, none of them really impressive. I mean, Illinois and Indiana, to be kind, are struggling in rebuilding mode. Eastern Michigan, Eastern Kentucky, Marshall. And then, what really, I think, as a Purdue person, would have to distress you the most, what were those three home games against Michigan, Wisconsin, and Penn State? Purdue not only got beat, they got absolutely drugged, trucked, run over, however you want to put it. Totally non-competitive. And then the game of Minnesota. I mean, that's a peer institution at worst, right? And Purdue's out of that game by halftime. So, again, Danny Hope, I know he's pleading for more time. He says there's a lot of work to be done when he got there. But you know what? I think 4 years plus a year as a head coach in waiting probably is long enough. And honestly, I think the die has been cast. And if you listen to and read some reports, some people say Morgan Burke's already looking around. So we'll see here shortly, I think. Maybe within a week we'll know something.
Now, Tom, you know, whether it be Coach Hope next season or someone else, you know, one thing about our alma mater is we're cheap. And and with, you know, with the expansion of the Big Ten and Purdue getting more money and Mitch Daniels coming in, we've got to pay our assistant coaches more, I think, to get the quality that you know, we're one of the lowest paid assistant coaches as far as staff in the nation. And you know, what do you see with Mitch Daniels? Do you see him putting more emphasis on sports than Cordova?
Yeah, you know, Joe, I guess I don't know Mitch Daniels well enough politically, philosophically, to maybe know what type of a mindset he's going to bring to that job. But on your first point, as far as I'll say being frugal, being thrifty, there's no doubt about it. Purdue is extremely wise with their checkbook, almost prideful in the fact that they run their athletic department, you know, as far as avoiding the deficit, staying in the black. So again, that only gets you so far. And you guys have heard the adage in life: you usually get what you pay for. Well, I think again, in some instances, that's applicable to Purdue's situation. And Joe, you talked about the salary pool for the assistant coaches, and that's got to be brought up. And if there is a new head coach, that salary is going to probably have to start bumping close to $2 million a year range. And again, the assistant coaches, your coordinators, are probably going to have to make at least $300,000, if not more. Indiana's done a good job with this. Coach K can speak to that. But the salary pool down there, I know, has really substantially been increased under Kevin Wilson. And I really like his staff a lot. I love Mark Eckler, Mallory, Seth Luttrell, Mark Hagan. He's got a nice staff and a well-compensated staff, too.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt, Tom. Indiana has gone ahead really under their last two athletic directors. And for some people, and at times I've questioned it as well, put out a lot of money, and some of it went the wrong way. But in their efforts to put seed in the field and get the kind of harvest return they want, I think they are laying the groundwork for that. I think they've done the things they've had to do with football, from the infrastructure to what you see when you walk up to the field. But now you got to get it done on the field. And Coach Wilson and his staff, I think, has put together a pretty good offense. And that takes us back to the bucket game. And I want to get your thoughts on this as we go into. I think it's a big game for Purdue, but it's a big game for Indiana to end the season on a real strong note offensively. Other than really the Wisconsin game, they have clicked quite a bit, been consistent. How shocking is it to have had three different quarterbacks that can all produce for you? My question going into that game is the Purdue offense good enough to overcome, now I don't want to say overcome, but to get through, I think, a vastly needed an improvement defense of Indiana, which they have improved week in and week out, or is the IU offense just going to be too strong for the defense? I mean, I kind of see this toss of the coin that you know, Indiana's weakness on defense, is Purdue strong enough to overcome that, and Purdue's defense, is it strong enough to hold back the IU offense when it gets on a roll?
Yeah, so I guess bottom line, which defense is going to step up maybe in the end could really decide this ball game, you know, at Purdue this weekend. That's a great point, Coach Kane. I tell you what, the strength of the Indiana defense obviously is up front with those tackles. Larry Black, Adam Rapolo, no doubt about it. The junior college linebacker, David Cooper's played well. The ends, though, are still a little spotty for Indiana. I think Purdue's going to just try to run the football, honestly. Ralph Bolden's healthy. Akeem Shavers, they've kind of reverted back to running the football. And then you have Robert Marv. I tell you what, to me, he's the real X factor here. What he's doing right now, playing with one bum knee, blown out ACL, is probably not getting enough national attention. I mean, just a steely will of toughness, and he's going to be hard to defeat. Singularly, what he brings to the field has been special the last couple of weeks. And in Indiana, you're right, the Purdue defense in a nutshell has really been a flop. You know, there's supposed to be four or five NFL players on that defense. They played well the last 2 weeks, but Iowa and Illinois don't have the offense Indiana does. You know, Coach K, you alluded to that. Can the Purdue defense slow down that Indiana offense? That's going to be key. That they've shown to be vulnerable to big plays in the passing game. They're going to have to get a pass rush. And Indiana's offensive line, neither offensive line is that good. But I still think there's a lot of talent on that defensive line for Purdue that have a chance to get after Kim Kaufman. I mean, you just think back of this season. If Indiana beats Ball State and Navy, find a way to beat Michigan State, just think of the where this program would be right now without Trey Roberson.
Yeah, and really both those games, Navy and Ball State, they had the opportunity to get that done, and it slipped away. Each one slipped away in a different way. You know, Ball State just came up just huge with mental toughness down there at the end of the game, and Navy just chipped away, and the IU defense just couldn't control. But you made a great point, Tom, and that's the big play. And that's what I wonder about going into this bucket game. IU, I believe, has the propensity, has shown it to make the big play, and will the Purdue defense be able to stop that big play? And I don't know. I haven't seen a lot out of the Purdue offense that makes me believe they're going to come up with those big plays, but they did do a good job in their last two games of coming up tough when they had to, both on the offensive end and the defensive end. So it's going to be a great game. Do you offer a prediction for that bucket game?
I'm going with Purdue, and I think each team's going to get some points. I do think Purdue will find a way to win, just because of like I said, the two big reasons. Number one, a little bit of a roll, and again, playing at home, a chance to get bowl eligibility. Number two, the Robert Marr factor as well. For Indiana, I still worry about their ability to run the football. They've never really been able to consistently do that well, week in and week out in the Big Ten, starting a couple of true freshman offensive linemen. And again, I'm not sure. Indiana will get some yards and some points, but I just don't think in the end they're going to be able to throw the ball 50 times and get out of there at the victory. I think they'll probably be able to get after the quarterback. Conversely, I think Purdue will be able to run the football, which will take some pressure off Marvin and allow them to be a little bit more balanced. And then it could get down to mistakes too, you know. And then again, Coach K, you talked about big plays, and if you had to give an edge to either offense, as far as that category goes, you would go with Indiana. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Purdue's offense just has lacked explosive potential all year, not a lot of big plays against these quality foes. But again, Indiana's secondary may be vulnerable, and maybe they can get a few more big plays than they've had in recent weeks.
Yeah, that, I tell you, you hit so many good points right there, and there's just those little question marks, those little seams and crevices. You know, does it come down to Indiana being able to run the ball? Hey, great question, because we haven't been able to all year. Does it come down to Purdue being able to stop the big play? Well, if they can keep Indiana from getting on a roll, the big play may not come into play at all. And then special teams, how do you, before we go on to the next question, how do you look at the special teams play of both Purdue and the Hoosiers?
Well, Purdue's special teams, honestly, haven't been special for some time now. I mean, go back over and look at that Ohio State game this year. I think they had an extra point block, or they missed an extra point, and then they missed a short field goal as well. So, and their best return man, you know, Mostert's been out for a while now. Just no real explosiveness in the return game. Got kid missed a field goal last week, I think a short 20-yard field goal. So, not great. Indiana's, the win kid's good on kickoffs. Indiana may have a slight edge there, I think. And again, it comes down to those special teams, too. I'll never forget the 1992 bucket game with Trent Green. We're playing at Purdue, and Indiana lined up for that field goal late. I think I should remember that, and they missed it. Purdue got called for the penalty. Indiana got it, like, first and goal about the one, and Jimmy Young picked off a pass to seal the game. So it could get down to special teams again. If it does, I guess I'd probably get a little bit of an edge for the Hoosiers.
Now, Tom, you brought up Mostert. What's the deal on him? Has he got a chance to be back for this, or a possible bowl game? Or?
Yeah, I think there's a chance. You know, the coaches always play a little bit coy with the injury situation, but his status doesn't seem like it's changed too much from week to week, but we still haven't seen him on the field for at least the last three or four games, if I remember correctly. So we know his explosive ability there. We've seen him run back kickoffs in the past, and we're having a weapon like that back there, like I said, and give you a short field sometimes, and maybe allow you to get a quick, easy touchdown.
Well, it's going to be exciting either way. I mean, both teams are struggling. There's no doubt about it, but it's still exciting because it's Purdue and IU. They are so closely connected in what one strength is, the other isn't. And it all evens out to make for a great game, and really the toss of a coin, and maybe it all depends on where it's being played at. I got another big question. Obviously, what's in the news now is with the Big Ten, and since you're such a vital part of the Big Ten network and just have tremendous background in sports and all these years, here we're into expansion. We've got a Big Ten that's not a Big Ten. We've got a Big Ten that is so much different in makeup going forward than any of us who have grown up around us, generations remember the Big Ten. We bring in Rutgers and Maryland, and obviously you're going into two major populated sectors. You're pushing the envelope of where we picked up Penn State a few years ago, new recruiting areas, new fan base. It changes the look of the Big Ten. There are a lot of people, Tom, questioning why Maryland and why, for sure, Rutgers. I know it affects the Big Ten Conference, but it's also going to help the Big Ten Network. Give us a little bit of a synopsis on why Maryland, and especially for me, why Rutgers?
Well, Coach K, I think in some way you answered the question right there. It gets down to location, 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 the old real estate mantra. That's what this is about. It's not about bringing in the name brand institution with years of tradition, 100,000 seat stadiums, and legions of fans. This is, again, about location. And, again, Rutgers sitting about 40 miles southwest of New York City in that massive $9 million population base. And, of course, Maryland, College Park, the campus sits right adjacent to Washington, D.C., not far from Baltimore. So, again, about 7 million people in that Beltway area. So, again, I think Jim Delaney looks at these two institutions as what I'm going to say undervalued. Undervalued assets with great potential. Again, neither of them have been consistently great in either sport. But, again, potentially in the right conference with the right resources could really blossom into strong institutions in time. And for the right now impact for the Big Ten, again, are all those eyeballs and television sets of people, which, again, will augment the Big Ten's negotiating when it comes to first-tier TV rights. Of course, will also help the Big Ten Network. So each side gets a benefit from this. Again, the Big Ten getting in those markets, and again, Rutgers and Maryland hitching their wagon to a stable conference. It's also a very lucrative conference with a chance for each institution to really improve itself athletically.
Yeah, and the Big Ten, to me, it's turning into that, to what I call that super conference. I see some dynamics changing, Tom, and I'll make another point on that that you tweeted about or that I read on your Twitter site a little bit earlier. The dynamics that I see in the Big Ten evolving is the type of athlete we recruit as well. You know, we've always been looked at as the Midwestern, hard-nosed, pounded, plotter. We get ourselves into a recruiting area that we see a lot more athletes, a lot more maybe skilled players that the Big Ten teams now have that corridor to go in, use their alumni connections in order to get some newer type of athlete, better, in some situations, better type of skilled players that allow us to compete a little bit more strongly come the bowl time. But the other thing that you had on your Twitter site was, I think an Omaha paper had something concerning the Big Ten might be looking at Kansas and North Carolina going forward.
Yeah, that was a report from Lee Barfnick of the Omaha World Herald, who had talked to several league administrators, or I should say administrators of schools in the conference. And again, that's just sort of some food for thought and a possible direction of the conference. The bottom line is this, you know, Joe and Coach K, is the Big Ten's probably not finished. They're not going to push themselves away from the table with just 14 teams. We're probably going to 16 here at some point. Who are those other two teams going to be? How soon are they going to become part of the conference are the two unknowns. But it's probably going to be sooner rather than later, because don't you think that the SEC, the Big 12, the Pac-12, even the ACC, which is getting eaten up, are going to now probably be in scramble mode to try to make something happen to expand their horizons as well. So, again, you know, Kansas, North Carolina, Georgia Tech, another school I've heard kicked around, going to Atlanta, a massive market with an institution like Georgia Tech, which is very, very good, very academic-minded, like the Big Ten schools, is another possibility. So it'll be interesting to see. Again, that's the one thing to remember is I don't think the Big Ten's done. Nobody thinks the Big Ten's done. And you know, a lot of people have been speculating for a couple of years now that we're probably going to eventually get to just four conferences with 16 teams each.
I got a twofold question here for you, Tom. Well, you know, with North Carolina being bantered around, that you know that pretty well. Yeah, I can see the. Can you see the other ACC teams blocking to save themselves? And also, I don't know much about the North Carolina area. Are North Carolina and Duke and North Carolina State not adjoined to the hip as much as I think, where one would jump to a different?
Yeah, Joe. Yeah, you're exactly right. That's a big stumbling block when you're talking about a school like North Carolina. Or if you're talking even about Kansas State, honestly, Virginia Tech. Again, North Carolina State. Would state legislators allow one to leave without the other? So, again, that would be a huge hurdle right there. And then, of course, the $50 million exit fee the ACC slapped on its member institutions if they opt to leave, that's something sitting in Maryland's lap right now. Can Maryland get out of that $50 million fee? Can Maryland get that $50 million fee reduced? Again, all eyes are going to be on that from the other ACC institutions. If Maryland can somehow get out of it or get it reduced, that's really going to be, I think, a big green light for other ACC schools to maybe start looking around in hopes of maybe leaving for better pastures. And, of course, not long ago, there was a lot of talk about Clemson and Florida State maybe going to the Big 12. Remember that, guys, the Big 12 only has 10 teams right now. And you got to think they're getting antsy. With the other two conferences, with 14, the Pac-12 with 12, and they only have 10, you'd think that's a conference that would be awfully eager and anxious to maybe make a move here for somebody.
Well, I'll tell you what, we go to 16, we got the conference name, the Sweet 16. Perfect for hoops, isn't it?
Then you still have Notre Dame. People kind of wonder what's going to happen with them now. Is the Big Ten doing this, you know, raid on the ACC to maybe, you know, usurp, chip away, lessen the coup of them going to the ACC for all sports football? So who knows? So could Notre Dame still exist as a solo entity if we do get the four 16-team conferences? So, again, there's a lot of different interesting dynamics still working at play here.
You know, Tom, you spent 18 years with the Sporting News, I believe. You won numerous awards from Football Writers Association of America. You've watched the Heisman process going forward and seen these winners over the years. As we get towards the end of the season and we're talking about all these potential Heismans, Johnny Football, Tail at Notre Dame, Klein, who's probably dropped a little bit, what are your thoughts on the Heisman race at this point?
You know what? Probably as wide open this late in the year as I can remember in recent memory. Last week really shook it up with Oregon going down, hurting Kenyon Barner's candidacy. Then, of course, Kansas State losing to Baylor. A 4-5 Baylor team hurts Colin Klein a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe the straw polls, right now Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football of Texas A&M is leading. Klein's still in it to a degree. I think Manti Te'o, maybe we really get that purely defensive player wins it this year. Honestly, it could happen. I think he's easily in the top two. Maybe you can make a case for him being number one right now. Braxton Miller, I think, is at least in a conversation with a chance to get to New York City. He can have a big game and a win over Michigan. So those are probably the main guys at this point. Maybe a wide receiver at USC, distantly Marquise Lee. But again, there's no real clear-cut guy right now that seems to be in command of it. And could we really have a redshirt freshman, Johnny Manziel, win the Heisman Trophy? Think about that. 2 years ago, we never had a sophomore where Tim Tebow blew through that. But now we could have our first freshman ever win the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, that would be really interesting, which leads me into my next question. Teo, Notre Dame, USC, they're going to go with a freshman quarterback. USC is, the Trojans are, Barkley out. Palmer on ESPN made the comment, no way USC can win, put the fodder up on the board. I know if I was still coaching and that was my team, I'd be hammering those comments. Notre Dame's been very good about keeping things on the low. Brian Kelly, who I watched him at Cincinnati, and I knew he would do a great job at Notre Dame as he got himself acclimated and got some of the the players where he needed them to be. And I still don't think he has some of the pieces of the puzzle he would like. But here we go. We've got an undefeated Notre Dame team that Pat Forte, Colin Cowherd, different people have said would never be relevant again. I heard him say it. Never relevant again. No one wants to come to South Bend. Too cold. This is just come out of the blue in many ways. Great stories individually and as a team at Notre Dame. They go into USC. What a legendary tradition game, and for all the marbles, really, for Notre Dame. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's right there for the Irish. I think it's been over 18 years since they were ranked number one. I don't remember. I mean, again, I guess that was, what, 1993? I remember it was the last time they really, I thought, were nationally relevant, national championship contenders.
Yeah.
That year they beat Florida State at home, and they got beat by Boston College, I think. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's been something. You look at the litany of coaches that have gone through there since Holtz left, with Bob Davey and Tyrone Willingham and Charlie Weiss. It's just been surprisingly average at best, with a few spots of brilliance here and there. So again, here are the Irish on the precipice of playing for a national championship. Like you said, Coach K, a lot of people thought maybe it was never going to happen again. The stars have aligned. This is a team built on defense. I guess I'm still not sold on the offense, but they're just good enough. There's a lot of potential there and still some good athletic ability. Now, they're, you know, again, one win from playing for the title at USC. And again, like you guys know, this is not a vintage SC team by any stretch of the imagination. With a first-time starting quarterback against that defense, how is USC going to score? But how many times have we looked back in history and read those type of stories where some player got suspended or hurt and their team didn't look like they had a chance, and somehow they find a way to pull the great upset? So I got a feeling this game still may be close. But in the end, I think the Irish and that defense will find a way to get out of L.A. with a win.
Well, I hope so. I'm an Irish fan when it comes to the gridiron, and after Baylor's upset, nothing will shock me. So I'm being pretty down low on it. To finish up the Notre Dame question, as we look at it, is there a quarterback controversy in the future in South Bend? You've got Keel sitting there. You've got a freshman quarterback that Kelly's gone with. He doesn't really possess the throwing ability, but he does bring diversification to that position because he can run with the ball. He's quick. He can elude. And I know this is a year out, and I'm bringing up things that people are going to say, what? Well, what's he done? But, you know, I can't help but sit back and think about the little carnival that Keel had from school to school. Now he's at Notre Dame, and he's looking at a potential situation where the quarterback that he needs to be out could lead them to a national championship.
Yeah, interesting dynamic, isn't it? Quarterback, I mean, we all know only one can play. We all know a lot of men are transferring. Tell you what, this Golston kid, he's not Dan Marino when it comes to throwing the football. Probably never will be, but he's awfully special too. So it's going to be good competition, Coach. Yeah, your coach, competition's good.
Yeah.
Let's see if Keel's going to run away from it, or if he's going to dig his heels in and battle for it. How's Golston going to react? So again, I tell you what, if you buy a kid, I guess it's a nice problem to have, right? So we'll find out come spring football exactly how that position begins to sort out, because like you said, the Keel kid was a mega prospect, but suddenly there's this other option at quarterback who just may lead the Irish to the promised land for the first time since 1988, guys. And how iconic would an Alabama-Notre Dame-BCS title game be as far as TV ratings go? That one probably set all types of marks for TV viewership, I would think.
Oh, I think it would, and they say out in Vegas already that it'll be the most bet on, and we're not advocating that, folks, but the most bet on game in the history of college sports. So that's going to be interesting dynamic to watch play out over the next, actually this weekend, and see where it goes for the SEC. Last question before we end this segment. And it's sad that we're going to end this segment, because I didn't even get into my love of basketball and talking Big Ten hoops with you. And so we're going to have to definitely have you back to talk basketball in the Big Ten. But I want to end it talking a little bit about Penn State and Ohio State. I don't want to rehash all the issues at Penn State because there will be hurt feelings for years, and it's sad that happened. A coach comes in, and I think he's done a great job. You've got Ohio State where the talent was there, but again, they had some transition going on. High profile coach comes in. Some people questioned whether he had the enthusiasm. People say to me, do coaches get too old to coach? And I say, no. Coaches don't get too old. It's their heart. If you're young at heart, it doesn't matter your age. And Urban Meyer comes into Ohio State. He's got them on a roll. People said they'll go up to Wisconsin and get beat. They didn't. They haven't won pretty, but they've won them all. Your thoughts on Penn State and your thoughts on Ohio State to end the segment.
Yeah, Penn State's been remarkable what Bill O'Brien's done under those circumstances. They lost Silas Red, the running back, Justin Brown, the wide receiver, and their kicker, Anthony Farrah, to transfer before the year. That looked like it was going to be a debilitating blow. Then Penn State opens 0-2, losing at home to Ohio, then they lose at Virginia. Then you're rubbing your head going, wow, this team's going to be lucky to win two or three games. Well, here they are, 7-4, one game left against Wisconsin. And I like the Nittany Lions' chances, which would be bad for a Badger team, guys. It's lost two out of its last three games. If they lose, we'll go to Indianapolis with a 7-5 record overall, 4-4 in the Big Ten. So, again, they need the momentum, but it's going to be hard, to beat this Penn State team on senior day over there in State College with what Bill O'Brien's done. So, great job on both sides of the ball with a roster that's limited as far as depth and overall talent goes. And then, well, what more can you say about Ohio State? I think people thought this could be a good team. Nobody envisioned them sitting on, again, the precipice of going 12-0 here. So, and like you said, Coach, it certainly has not been pretty. The defense is far from dominating, and the offense has been the closest thing to a one-man gang we've seen. Who else on that offense really scares you outside of Braxton Miller? Ask yourself that. The wide receivers are decent. Carlos Hyde's come on at running back, but again, not a lot of great, scary players there aside from Miller. So great job by Meyer and that staff. And boy, to punch their ticket at 12-0, what a signal that'll send for the future of Ohio State. I'll tell you what, this Ohio State-Michigan thing, you guys are of my generation. It looks like we're going to about ready to enter a golden age in this rivalry, I think, with Hoke versus Urban Meyer. I'm not saying it's Hayes against Woody against Bo, but I'll tell you what, these teams, these coaches, how they've started those programs, how they're recruiting, you kind of get to see, and they're headed for an extended run of dominance here. And again, what I think could be another glory period for this great rivalry.
Yeah, and Hoke at Michigan, guy paid his dues, made the moves he had to make, proved he could coach, and now he's in Michigan, and that is going to be a great rivalry. Tom, it was so great to talk to you, and I'm sorry our segment's going to end. Yeah, a wealth of knowledge. Great to have you as a part of the show today. And will you come back and talk Big Ten hoops with me? Because I got to tell you something. I love Big Ten hoops. One of my former players went to IU and played Michael Lewis, all-time assist leader. What a great win for him and the Butler Bulldogs. Brad Stevens, Michael's on the staff. Huge win over North Carolina. In the Maui Classic, my gosh, they up 30 and then held on to win by the skin of their teeth. But will you come back and talk hoops with us?
Oh, yeah, Coach K. Joe, I'd love to do that. We're just finally taking the lid off that. So basketball will definitely be heating up, and I'd love to come back and talk some hoops with you guys.
Well, that sounds great, Tom. Hope to have you back. And also, you know, you need to tell the Big Ten Network, I know how they have the certain school days, and you need to tell them that that Tom and Joe need to have the Jasper, or not the Jasper, the Purdue day, and I'll bring a bunch of classic games that they do not have, and you and I will sit there and talk Purdue football and basketball, and have all the knuckleheads from Purdue excited, and have all the people like Kenny Schultz, Coach Schultz, for. So, okay.
You know, I love that, boy, Joe. We've talked about that, and I've mentioned you to some people up there in the offices in Chicago. So, boy, that'd be a dream come true, man.
That'd be fun. So, but hey, Tom, thanks for coming on, and we'll be getting back with you talking Big Ten hoops real soon. Okay.
Sounds good. Thanks again, guys.
Great
and,
stuff.
When we come back, we'll be talking high school hoops. Coach K, with a wealth of knowledge there, some think. And also, we'd like to hear from you. 773-897-6325.
You are listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Join Ken, Coach K, Schultheis, and Joe Milligan every Friday from 11 to 1 for the Coach K and Joe Show. High school sports, college sports, pro sports. They will talk about it all with guests from around the state. The Coach K and Joe Show brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. You can listen to the Coach K and Joe Show by going to jaspertodayonline.com and clicking on the link. You can also listen to archive shows there. It's the Coach K and Joe Show every Friday at 11 on jaspertodayonline.com.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? Well, team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team. We've had over 5,000 listeners through our first three shows, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
What are you talking about, Willis? That him!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is okay. Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Okay, and we're back from break, and I'll tell you what, we said we were going to talk high school hoops. I think we have something just a little bit better for you. We've got Jasper native Major League Baseball player Scott Rowland. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Let's talk high school hoops, though, Joe.
Well, if we do that, you do know the Coach K part would talk 95% of the time.
95% of it. Let's talk sectional basketball. Let's talk about class system back in the day. Are you kidding me?
Hey, you know what? We can do that. You know, the one thing I told people is when you listen to the Scott Rowland segment, we're live, and Scott has the ability to take that on and turn it around, and we'll see who's interviewing who by the end of the show. But it is great to have you, Scott, and we appreciate you taking the time to come on. I know you're down in sunny Florida enjoying the water and family time over Thanksgiving, and since that's where you're at, and I know people would love to know, and yes, they really would love to know, tell us a little bit about how your family's doing right now.
I pick Coach K over my kids. That's what's going on right now. You know, our family, everybody's doing great. I'm busy in school. I'm busy going to literacy nights, PTO meetings. You know, the good stuff, dropping the kids off at school, picking them up. Finn Man's in preschool right now. I think he's dominating. We'll see. Rain's in second grade, so they're doing great. We're in Bloomington, spent our time, came down here for Thanksgiving to Mom and Dad's house down in Florida. So beautiful weather down here and enjoying it.
So you're giving Nikki a little break, and you're handling the parental duties and in between school and all those things. Now, how's the schedule work? You get Finn up about 4 a.m. He goes through a baseball workout. Then you take him in and get a basketball workout. Are we about right on the schedule?
We're running a killers and explosion drill pretty much most of the day. I kind of segue him into baseball. We don't actually fine-tune baseball skills. It's kind of like when we were playing basketball with you, Coach. We'd have a 5.5-hour practice and never pick a basketball up. Just good, clean fun for the high school kids. All we hear are whistles and line drills.
I appreciate that, Scott. We wanted to make sure you were in good shape mentally and physically. Let's just talk quickly about, and I'll let you talk about it, whatever you want to talk about, but I do want to touch base on this season with the Reds. You guys kind of rebounded, and, of course, however I say it, you'll be able to pick it to pieces, but you kind of rebounded, got some guys back. Pitching was added some people. The pitching, the first week, I got to tell you, I was a little nervous about it, but as the first month went on and time went on, the pitching really picked up. The hitting did what it needed to do to help win games. The defense was outstanding. And the Reds as a unit, and I really mean that as a team from the spectator standpoint, really seemed to come together, and everybody pitched in a little bit to get you in a position to win your division.
Well, I mean, to me, I'm, you know, my belief, you know, all the way through is, you know, pitch and play defense. And that's what we did all year. I mean, you look at the Giants, who won the World Series. They pitched and they played defense. I mean, that's what they did. Their offense wasn't, you know, at the top of the league. Our offense this year, you know, wasn't at the very top of the league where we had been the last few years. But we pitched, we caught the ball. You know, you get when you're turning double plays and when you're getting ground balls, and, you know, especially Great American Ballpark, it's a hitter's ballpark, obviously, and our guys kept the ball on the ground, they kept it in the park, and, you know, that's a tough ballpark to lead. I think our bullpen led the National League in ERA. I mean, that's a tall order, tough ballpark right there. So, you know, when you're giving up 1, 2, and 3 runs a game, you always have a shot. You always have a chance for somebody to hit a 3-run home run, put you in the game, put you in the lead. And that's what we did all year. We struggled offensively there for a little while. We lost Votto for a good chunk of the time. And you know, we scrapped some runs together. And you know, all year kind of ran away with the division, actually. And you know, by pitching and catching the ball.
Well, and that was interesting. You bring up the Votto point, and I did want to touch base on that because, you know, we've known each other a long time, and I know at times probably too long for you, but the mental part of playing every day, practicing, whether it be high school, college, and then what you guys go through on the Major League Baseball level, which we'll touch base as well, but mentally – you go through an injury again, the stupid shoulder and the back's bothering you a little bit, and then
that
Votto
was the
goes
killers.
Down.
My back started bothering me when I was in high school doing killers, touching the line. That's when I started herniating disc at that point, I think.
I thought it was all the three-pointers that you were shooting.
No, I put my finger to one man and one spot in one game that started hurting my back that affected me last year and kept me off the field.
Did you like his six-hour practices he used to hold?
He did. He says we've known each other too long. I just remember seeing him too long when I was in high school in blocks of time.
Well, you're not.
Couldn't you do an hour and a half that you could do in six?
You're not blaming Donnie, my brother Don, for giving you a forearm shiver to the back in Turkey Bowl or something, are you?
Donnie has made everybody that's guarded him and played against him have legendary status in Turkey Ball from his flops that he takes on the court.
All right, let's get back to the original thought. Votto goes down. You come back after the All-Star break, and the team, again, pitching and defense is the key, no doubt about it, Scott. But you guys just seem to just strap them on and pull them up and mentally just get tough during that period. You come back after the All-Star break. I think you hit over 290 after the All-Star break. I mean, the leadership, the sense in the clubhouse, how does that all come together when you have a major component of the team, the offensive end, leadership and anchor on the first base? You know, how did that process or that mindset, was it there when the season started? How do you pull that together when all the media's out there saying, oh, there's no way they're going to be able to hold on and just really play great baseball through that stretch?
Right. I don't think there's enough time on the show for me anyway. I know, but you know, there's a distinction, you know, when in professional baseball, Major League Baseball, when you're playing 162 games, you know, it's not a college football game where you get a good speech and you bang each other's head a little bit and you go out, you know, you're more intense than the team that you're playing, or a basketball game, or, you know, there's no regrouping necessarily. It's 162 games, and yes, Votto goes down, and yes, he's one of the best players in the league by far. But, you know, it's a big story, I think, from the outside and from the media and from the inside and where we are. It doesn't change our day. You know, I'm still drinking tea. I wish I were a coffee drinker every day. Mm-hmm. But I am a tea drinker, and I wish, like I said, I wish I could toughen up a touch and drink black coffee like a grown man. But I don't. I don't, but that's what I mean. I didn't, because Votto went down, I didn't start drinking coffee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
We go to our locker, we show up at the same time. We didn't have to get there earlier. You know, we didn't take more rounds of batting practice. We didn't do anything that I think there's a misconception that, oh, my God, the team has to put their heads together and huddle. You know, we're in game 98 at the time or 100 at the time or whatever it is, and we've been going since the middle of February, and guys have been working out since November of the last year. So, you know, there's an act of selfishness in the game that I don't think people give us credit for necessarily, where, I mean, you can say credit or discredit or whatever you want to say, but guys want to go out and perform. They want to do their best, because we lose a pitcher, because we lose Johnny Cueto at the beginning of the, you know, nine pitches into the postseason. That doesn't change how well Matt Latos wants to do. You know, it doesn't change how well Ryan Ludwig wants to do when Votto goes down. Whether Votto's in the lineup or not, Ludwig wants to hit 30 home runs and drive in 100. And, you know, that's his job. And that's the professional aspect that I think is not necessarily carried over all the time, you know, from fans and media to what's going on in that clubhouse. We get paid. We have a job. Our job is to go in and prepare ourselves and to focus before the game to put ourselves in the best position to compete while the game's going on. Our job is not to hit doubles and singles and home runs and drive in runs. Our job is to prepare ourselves to do that. And, you know, our general manager and our manager and the people that are putting us on the field, they're the ones that evaluate us and say, you know what, if he's healthy, if he's on the field, he's going to hit doubles and home runs and drive runs in. He takes good at-bats. He plays good defense. We have to prepare ourselves to do that, not to go out and expect that result and strive for that result. We have to, you know, respect the process of it and the approach of it, because some days you're facing Roy Halladay, and you know what? His job's to make pretty damn sure you don't hit a double off of him.
Yeah.
And that's a tough day. You have your hands full. But over the course of the season, the consistency, the long haul, you prepare yourself to put yourself in a position to succeed. And so, you know, when you lose Joey Votto, you know, there's 25 guys there. You didn't lose Michael Jordan, you know, out of five.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line is, you lose Joey Votto, you give the ball to Johnny Cueto and he throws a shutout, well, you win. You know, that's the part of baseball that, you know, is this manager great? Is this guy good? Is this leadership leading? Whatever's going on out there, you know, there is a distinction to be made that you give the ball to Roy Halladay, he throws a shutout. Well, none of that really mattered.
Yeah.
You know, who the manager was and who a leader is, or who your cleanup hitter is, and the whole works. I mean, that's goes back to pitching and what we're talking about, without a doubt. So, did we play well? We played great. We played good baseball. We had a good team, without a doubt. You know, you don't win without good players. We had good players, a lot of talent on the field. Everybody got along well and got opportunities to step up and, you know, put numbers up and hit and do what we needed to do to get where we were, and that's exactly what happened.
And Scott, just
what was the question?
Well, I just wanted to build on on what you said, and it was perfect. You've got pieces in a puzzle, and that those pieces come together, and they work together, and the guy steps up, and he takes the ball, and he does his job, and the guys behind him catch the ball, and the guys are up there. You told me one time you go to batting practice, you're working on that swing, you're working on seeing that ball for that one pitch in that at-bat that you can hit, that you can drive. But you told me something the other a few years ago that's always stuck with me, and I've shared with other people, and it kind of reminds me of Cody Zeller being out. He was not feeling well out in Brooklyn, but, you know, he played and he was out there. You told me one time that sometimes, and we know this in athletics and coaching and business, whatever it might be, but you said sometimes you know that you may struggle that day. But you go out there anyway, one, because it's your job to do it, and two, because that changes the way that team pitches your team. Can you just talk a little bit about the grind that, you guys go through, the mental part of going out there when you're not feeling well? And when Scott Rowland is hurt, Scott Rowland is really, really hurt. And the same for a Joey Votto and on. But there are a lot of days you guys are going out there physically beat up, and you know you got to go out there because, one, that's what they brought you there to do, but, two, you want to make sure that, you being out or they can't change the direction of how they pitch the team or what happens.
Well, yeah, there's a strategy, you know, a slight strategy that's part of it. But the word that always comes to mind to me, and the word I like to use, is accountability. You know, you're accountable for your position. I'm accountable to play third base for the Cincinnati Reds. You know, when I was playing third base for the Cincinnati Reds, that's my position, that's my spot in the order. You know, that's what I have to do. If my back's bothering me or whatever, and I can go out there and play and be accountable, then that's my job. That's what I'm doing that day. We don't know if I'm going 0-for-4, 2-for-4, or whatever's happening, you know, but we do know that is my job on that team, and that's what I need to take a lot of pride in, and I have a responsibility and accountability to show up and to be out there for my teammates. And, you know, Joey Votto playing first base, sitting in the three hole for the Cincinnati Reds, strategically is a big deal. And not to I told you that I might have left out the first part of it, because the first part might be better, not to name drop, but when I was a rookie, I went and asked Cal Ripken that question about days off, and this is a strategy part. And it took a lot for me to walk over there and try to ask him this question. And, you know, first of all, he basically said, you know, don't do what I'm doing. You know, this is crazy, which is fair. I get it now. But, you know, his point was, you know, no, you don't take days off. But there are mental days, there are some times when you're not going to help your team, when you're truly not going to help your team. You're going to hurt your team. And he says it's a battle between you and the manager and everybody to figure out when that day is. And if you're an everyday player, it's here or there. But he says when you're not feeling good, when you're not getting some hits, when you're not in a slump, that's when he was talking about strategically. Let's use Joey Votto again. Joey Votto hitting in the three hole for the Reds makes the Reds better. They don't know on the other side how he's feeling. Mm-hmm. If he's sick, if something's bothering him, if he's slumping, if he can't get the bat hit there, they know that they get into a spot in the eighth inning and a righty's on the mound and they have to pitch to him, they're going to get the lefty. They don't know that he's not getting hit that day off of that righty. Mm-hmm. That changes the strategy of the game. If he strikes out, let's say, then you got a lefty facing the righty behind him, doubling the gap, the game breaks open. It changes things. Now, all that occurred simply from Votto being accountable and walking out on the field and playing his position. You know, I don't want to use Votto, but, I mean, he's a force in the middle of the lineup. That's why I use that situation. So simply by preparing yourself and doing your job and biting your lip a little bit and going out there and being accountable for your position, that all changes the game. You know, I'm not a believer in, you see all the time where a guy steals or he gets picked off a second base and the next guy gets a base hit and everybody yells he would have scored. Well, that's not true. He wouldn't have scored because now the pitcher's in the windup instead of the stretch. Now the pitcher maybe threw a fastball instead of a breaking ball. Now everything changes all the way through the game. You know, you can't just say, well, he was on second, got picked off, the next guy gets a hit. None of that would have happened. You know, it might have happened, but everything changes after that play, and that's kind of what we're talking about. You control the things that you control. You don't control the umpire. You don't control what the pitcher's going to throw. You control what you do, and one thing you can always control is your effort level. You take your effort level out there, you take your concentration and focus out there, and that's the longevity and, you know, trying to get through the entire season and be a good player and be accountable for your team.
Okay, Scott, we got a question from our Facebook page for you. You don't know. John in Jasper says, Scott is well known as being dignified and unquestionably humble. As difficult as it is for him, what would he like his epitaph to say?
Wow. You're getting right to it, huh? I thought I was going to say, who's the hardest pitcher he faced? That's always the easy one.
We go hard. We go inside. We want to know what the inner workings are.
I don't know. That's probably a big life question right there. If I'll just transfer it to baseball alone. On the big life side, I would like for it to say, you know, he was a good father, you know, he's a good dad. And I pulled the baseball because, you know, I've read and seen a lot of things and heard, you know, oh, man, what do you want people to say about you, you know, in your baseball world when you're gone, when you don't play anymore? And, you know, I heard Ted Williams say, there goes the best hitter that's ever played in the game like that. And I always kind of thought, man, I'd like for it to say he was a good teammate.
Yeah.
You know, he was a good guy. He was a decent guy and a good teammate. You know, that would be huge, huge compliment to me. And like you say, on the life side of things, you know, I would like for it to have a very similar ring to it as, you know, saying just simply, maybe he was a good dad. You know, and that's plenty for me.
You know, that's the Scott Rolen I know. And, you know, we razz each other, and you had your days when you weren't happy with me, but I can tell you I was always happy with you, Scott. But let's talk about something.
You have an unbelievable way of showing happiness.
Let's talk about something that's pretty interesting. And most of these people are thinking, oh, this must be a major baseball question. No, I have one more of those for later. But you were a lifelong Kentucky fan. When you were playing basketball at Jasper and, you know, one of the things you would have liked to have done if you could was go to Kentucky and play basketball on a scholarship. I know when we played Evansville-Harrison, Walter McCarty down at Harrison, Patino was in the stands to come watch Walter and to watch you both. But you've been a blue man, a Kentucky blue man. But that's kind of changed for you, and you've left the dark side and gone to the real light, and you're kind of becoming an IU Hoosier fan, and part of that's from your association with Coach Crean.
Yeah, no, I'm a Hoosier, that's for sure. I grew up a Kentucky fan. I wasn't a big fan of, you know, pass the ball in the half court offense and screen away. So I kind of like the Kentucky, you know, getting up and down the floor and playing and you know, running transition and going through. It wasn't real exciting for me to watch half-court basketball at the time before I knew anything about what was going on. So I kind of gravitated to Kentucky, and I became a big Kentucky fan then along the way. And then when Patino was there, I went a semester at school there. It was Corey, you know, Libahoo's in box, and you know, we got some basketball tickets and snuck into practices, and when Patino was there and they won the national championship, and that was all good stuff. And then I tell you what happened, as I got busy in baseball and in the minor leagues and the major leagues, and I kind of got away from, I don't know, I just quit. I didn't watch much basketball anymore. I kind of get consumed at what I was doing, and I kind of just wiped everything away. I mean, I just wasn't paying much attention anymore to what was going on and what the teams were doing and whatever along the way. And then the farther you go, you feel a pride of Indiana. You know, I'm from Indiana, and you know, it kind of hit me, man. You know, you kind of start checking on Indiana to see how Indiana's doing, because you know, some people know you from Indiana, and hey, you big Indiana fan. And I start thinking, yeah, I should be. You know. Dang, I'm from Indiana. I can't be a Kentucky fan. I'm from Indiana. But just being away from it for quite a while has, you know, did a lot for me. And then, you know, we're living in the Bloomington area, and I'm trying to help their baseball program a little bit. And I know their baseball coach, and I've known Crean from when he was up in Marquette. So I'm brainwashed for sure. So I'm, like I said, I'm living there. I have season tickets right now. I didn't tell you that, Coach. For obvious reasons, but I do have some.
Well, I would hope you'd let me have a ticket to the game.
That's exactly why. But I got season basketball tickets, and I'm in now. And I've been in for the last 5 years. We were going to games when they were winning 4-6 when Cream took over, whatever, and it was painful and ugly. But that was kind of the way I wanted it. I kind of came in at ground level. I didn't come in when they were number one, and it's only been 4 years. But I kind of, like you said, when Cream was there, I stepped up and kind of got in with the whole thing, and it was good to see as much as they struggled at that point to where they are right now. I think you and I are part of it.
And you have been a part of it, and I know when we get together once in a while and banter back and forth about it, you've been there with him on the bottom floor, and your relationship back at Marquette, it's a great story. I think you were with the Cardinals and you came in there and you were shooting around and the Marquette team was kind of off the court, and I think you went around the arc a couple of times and just hit every three and astonished the whole team and astonished the coaching staff. But I tell people all the time, the man was a phenomenal shooter. I mean, you really were. And I tell people, yes, he did have some God-given skills to do that, but this is the truth. And I want people to listen because I tell young people this all the time. Scott Rowland's a great baseball player, but he was a really, really good basketball player, and I think he would have been an excellent basketball on the Division I level. But here's what he did, and you did, Scott. You can downplay it all you want. You were in that gym, and you were shooting all the time. On the weekends, you would come get the keys from me to go into that gym and shoot. You might throw a baseball. You might do something else. You might sit around and talk to people for a while, but you got to shoot a way out, and you shot, and you shot, and you shot, and then you might meet your buddies later on. So you not only had some ability to do that, and when I meet a young man that has the ability to shoot or a young lady that has the ability to shoot the ball, I constantly talk about don't just be a good shooter, end up a great shooter. You put in a lot of time and effort as a young man in high school honing some of your skills and abilities, AAU basketball and then playing travel baseball. I mean, with the Indiana Bulls, you weren't just sitting around. You were constantly doing something.
I was doing something. I had to come in on the weekends to shoot because we didn't touch a ball for the 70 hours that we practiced during the week. So it was the only time I could actually shoot the ball with the shooter aid. So it's a partially correct story. But, no, I believe in all the sports, Coach. I don't believe in concentrating on baseball, concentrating on basketball. I never have. I think they all overlap. Whether you're playing football and tennis with footwork and football's toughness and, basketball's toughness and intensity, and it goes to the baseball field. I think mentally and physically you learn something from every sport, and I think they all go together, and even soccer. And right now I want, my kids go out and play. We try to play a little bit of everything, all the way through. And I'm not grooming anybody for anything, by any means, but I just want everybody – I want my kids to have fun and to play and overlap the sports. Concentration on one sport I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah, and you showed that all through your life, and I think your dad and mom were brought you up that way. And I know when people ask me and they're going to concentrate on this sport in third grade all the way through, I just tell them, please don't do that because it's different muscle memory. It's just different opportunities. Even when they're playing wiffle ball and they're in a 3-on-3 pickup basketball, they learn how to play together. They learn how to argue together. They learn how to settle conflicts. There's just so much that you learn and get creative with. But I got to ask you the last big baseball question I'll ask you, and that would be, are you at a point where you've made a decision for next year, or are you still Scott Rowland still thinking about what he wants to do?
No, I'm thinking. I'm wide open, and I'm thinking about what I'm doing. I'm comfortable. I mean, right now it's the off season, and like I said, I don't have a plan for next season at this time. The Reds have asked me to come back in a partial role, in a bench player type role. And I appreciate that offer for sure. And my agent's, he's keeping his ears and eyes open, and he's talked to a few people and they've talked to him. So I don't know what the answer is. I know that my kids are 7 and 5, and I'm enjoying where I am and being with them right now for sure. I'll see how it goes. We'll come along. I'm gonna I'm going to come back down here at the beginning of December and work out and get in shape if for health, if for no other reason, and, you know, see what happens along the way. But I'm not out looking for a job right now, I guess, is the best way I can say it. You know, I have plenty my hands full with the kids and with everything, and I'm pretty happy with my job right now. So, but that's not to say that I'm not open minded about everything. So we'll see.
Well, you know, I'll just say this, and I'm pretty honest about my thoughts on things, and whether you agree with them or not, I would tell anybody if I didn't think Scott Rolen could still play the game at the high level. And I think when you're healthy, and I know that's the big thing, when you feel healthy enough, you're as good as anybody at third base. You can still hit the ball. You can still do the things that need to be done. So I hope that you have a great off season and you come out and you feel good and there's an option that you feel good about, because I know for me, and for a lot of other people, and I've told you this for your long baseball career, there's a lot of people that get up the next morning and they want to see how Scott Rolen did in that box score. And whether it's shallow, whether it's right, whether it's wrong, you make their day go just a little bit better because they can look and see that. So I hope things work the way you want them to work, and I'll be a little selfish. I love seeing you. You out there playing. Last thing before we end the segment, Scott, you give a lot back to the community, and you do it in quiet ways. You've done a lot for the Jasper community and other entities and people out there, but you have something close to you and your family's heart, and that's the Scott Rolen's Enos Furley Foundation. And I know I've been involved at different times in helping you with different things, and it's a great, great foundation. I'm going to tell people, when you're going through difficulty as a family, my father-in-law is battling lung cancer right now, and I know as adults how difficult it is on a family, but man, it's even worse when kids are going through tough times physically and mentally and things like that. And Enos Furley Foundation steps up to help families and that youngster who are going through difficulties.
Well, we put it together quite a few years ago, and it was really been an idea, and we're in a spot right now where we're, you know, I'm kind of in a crossroads like we just talked about and what I'm doing, and I might have more time to free up, and what we have been doing, you know, it started with an idea when I was all the way back in Philadelphia, how many years ago, 15, 16 years ago, and you know, we'd go on hospital visits to children, and I tried to stay involved in children's foundations and communities, you know, Make-A-Wish and Children's Miracle Network and things like that, and they put together hospital visits, and it always occurred to me there was, when you walk in that room and we had our jerseys on and the fanatic would go with us and everything, no matter what that child's condition was, and we were in some tough spots. I mean, you know, some tough hospital rooms, without a doubt, no matter what their condition was. You know, their family, the child, their family, everybody, they just lit up, absolutely lit up. And it was, you know, whatever duration we were in that room was, 2 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, it didn't matter what we were giving them. It didn't matter if they were getting jerseys, if they were getting this. It was just the presence of and the interaction that when we showed up there, it was, a real lift for them. And for that little time, we felt like we were making a big difference. And, you know, I had talked to my brother Todd, you know, about it, and our initial idea was to basically build a big top tent as a circus and walk around wearing clown shoes and bozo noses. But we've refined that a touch, and not that we're good dressers, but we have refined that, and we bought some land in Bloomington out by Blake Monroe, and we've built the children's camp there. We call it Camp Emmalou after our black lab, and it's Enos Furley Foundation after our golden retriever pointer mix, and so we tried to keep it pretty low key and you know, kind of private, try to stay doing the right thing. But the foundation, we have different segments of it. Like I said, we're working hard right now to kind of pull it together and streamline it if I have some extra time here. And we bring kids to Camp Emmalou, their families. We have four cabins. We have a lodge, a petting zoo. We're building a horse barn right now. we're getting plants for an indoor rec center, and we bring them out for a long weekend. Whether the child's sick or the mother or father's sick, we have different weekends. Try to put you know, children and families with similar situations together, and let them network and talk a little bit and run some camps. You know, we brought some autism. We put an autism camp together and brought four families from Jasper, and it worked out great. And you know, it's an all expense paid, you know, weekend. We gather sponsors for those families that come out to sponsor them for that weekend. And you know, we do everything. We do arts and crafts, scavenger hunts. We play soccer. We play, you know, whatever it might be. We have a baseball field out there, and try to have a good time. But more importantly, try to get the families together. Try to get the kids together, and let them spend some family time away from their situation, you know, for a weekend, and just take a break. And you know, no more, no less. We don't have the ability to cure anything by any means. You've talked to me long enough. You know, I can't cure anything, but mm-hmm. you know, I think we can make a little dent and help people, you know, step away from their situation that they're in a tough spot at that time, and let the kids smile, and you know, that's one aspect. The other aspect, which you've helped us with, we call it Hot Corner Kids, and it's still part of the Enos Furley Foundation, but we bring children and their families to Cincinnati, and we did it to St. Louis. And we have a program with the IU, where we go to men's basketball games, football games, women's volleyball, women's basketball, and we call them experiences, and we bring the kids and their families to an IU basketball game. They meet the team, they go to practice. Coach Crean's been great. You know, everybody's been great along the way, and it's a local experience where they can go there with their families, like I said, get pictures and look at them behind the scenes a little bit and hang out with the team. And, you know, that's a nice thing as well. And, you know, we brought the same thing down in Cincinnati. When I was able to be down there, we'd bring clubhouse tours and on the field for batting practice and meet different guys on the team. And, you know, that's a nice break and a nice trip experience for kids as well. So we're trying to do the right thing. We don't publicize it a whole lot. I have a pretty strong belief that generosity and publicity don't necessarily go hand in hand all the time. Okay, hang on, there you go. And so they just jumped in the pool. So,
well, Scott, I will say this, and if you don't want to publicize it, I will for you. This is the time of the year when people get ready to look at their final tax-deductible donations before they get to the end of the year and the income tax. This is a great foundation. It is a tax-deductible donation. You're helping families. You're helping kids have some normalcy, maybe for a short time, but something they may not have had for a long time. And you're partnering. And the big thing is, it's not just one person giving. It's when you partner. That's where you make the big difference in the team.
There's no doubt about that. And you know, we ask for help in ways that, you know, with selection committee. We don't have a huge selection committee with a huge hospital somewhere or anything. We've had great success with, do you know a neighbor? Do you know a family? Do you know somebody that could use some help, could use a little push and along the way? And that's what we've done. So we, you know, that's the community part of it that you're talking about. And,
yeah.
And like you said, is there donation, you know, possibilities, you know, there are donation possibilities for Hot Corner Kids and for sponsoring families and corporate stuff all along the way. But we're trying to do good things for families and kids and get them here and you know, in a community type atmosphere where, you know, we can all kind of word of mouth, you know, put some people in situations to help them.
Well, that's awesome. And people can go to Scott Rowland's Enos Furley Foundation on the webpage, and you can donate there. And Todd, his brother, and his sister.
Coach. Can you spell it?
EnosFurley.com. And go there and donate.
Everybody's
and,
all over me. But you can make it the Scott Rowland Foundation. Well, that's probably easier to spell. EnosFurley.com.
EnosFurley.com. Go there, folks, and make a donation. And it's tax deductible, and it really does help young people and their families. And you get a partner with a great group, a great family in the Rollins. And, Scott, we're going to let you go and get back with the kids and jump in the pool if you want to. Certainly appreciate you coming on. It was great to have you. We go back a long way, some good, bad, but in the end, Janet, myself, and family, we love you, and we love your family, and thanks for being on.
No problem. I appreciate it, guys. It was all good, too, Coach. Come on. I didn't know it at the time, but it's all good. I grew up. You made me grow up. You kidding me? And I tell Donnie, he's done. Next turkey ball that I'm there, he's done.
We hope that there is another one, because we've got some of our young kids that are now 22 and 20 and 18, and they're out there throwing those forearm shivers, giving a little shove in the back. They're learning well from their dad, Scott.
I'm taking it personally. I am going to absolutely annihilate every Schulteis that walks on the court.
We're going to go to break. We'll be back to talk high school football with Bill Somm out of Indianapolis. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams. Natural-looking fillings. Crowns. Bridges and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
Cal, you could say that 10,000 times and it still wouldn't be enough.
It fires me up, man.
I love it. Say it one more time.
Shake it, bitch!
Does that feel good?
Yeah, it rhymes. They're both verbs. Awesome.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, we're back. What a great time we've had. Tom Dienert of the Big Ten Network just finished up with Scott Rowland. And, folks, you heard it from Scott. He's made no decision on next year, so whatever you read on the Internet isn't quite true. Reds are interested, maybe some other teams, but Scott's not ready to make that decision. We're shaking and baking right now. We're going to the football playoffs up at Lucas Oil Stadium, and we've got with us Bill Somm. Bill, how are we doing today?
Great, Coach. How are you doing?
Well, Bill, I'm sorry we had to sandwich you a little bit, but we want to hit these football playoffs. So let's get right into it. You've got a personal interest, obviously, in one of these games, but let's get into it and let's run them down and let's shake and bake.
All right, Coach. We'll try and follow up that great segment with that all-star. But we're excited here in Indianapolis today about 3:30. Lafayette Central plays Cecina. Lafayette Central's 13-1. They're actually going for a four-peat, four in a row today. Other piece of this game is actually both schools are going to move to 2A next year. LCC is ranked 34th in the staggering ratings. Cecina 60. Last year, same game last year, Lafayette Central beat Cecina for the state championship 38-7. I think it's going to be very difficult for Cecina to prevail. They're very good. They love to run the ball. They've got three running backs that each have 100-plus carries. They won in overtime last weekend, but LCC has a great wide receiver. He averages 17 yards a catch. They have a running back who has 1,400 yards, and he missed 2.5 games and still has 1,400 yards. So that single-A game, I think, it's going to be a good one, but I think it's going to be very difficult for Cecina even this second time around with LCC.
Hey, Bill, I want to remind our listeners that our live show is going to end in a few minutes, but we continue on, and we are available for the full show on podcast and iTunes. I don't want anybody to miss anything, so I just want to let them know that. Let's go right back at it, Bill.
Okay, the second game today and last game today is Fort Wayne Bishop Lerb against Cardinal Ritter. This potentially is the best game of the whole weekend. Ritter's 14-0, Lerb's is 10-4. It actually could be a game that each team has a Mr. Football. This year's leading candidate is Jalen Smith, the kid from Lerb, who's a running back linebacker. He's got 1,100 yards, 15 touchdowns, 18 tackles for losses. Most likely this year's Mr. Football. Ritter's quarterback has 42 touchdowns and 27 passing yards. It's probably the leading candidate for next year's Mr. Football. So that this is probably going to be the best game of the weekend. Lurs is 21 in the Sagarin, and Ritter's 13.
Will both these teams move up on the success rule next year or not?
Lurs moves up, but Ritter does not.
Okay.
Tomorrow we've got three football games, as everyone's aware. The 3A game is Hamilton Heights versus Bishop Chatard. Bishop Chatard's just a very, very good football team. They're 12-2, and we've talked about them all season. They played a very difficult schedule. They're fifth in the Sagarin ratings. Hamilton Heights is 20th. Hamilton Heights, you know, what a great run. They're 13-1. They're playing for their first state championship. They get to go to Lucas Oil. They run a very balanced offense. Run a very balanced offense, and last week they had 360 yards offense, and they actually were half passing and half running. So a good football team in Hamilton Heights with Bishop Chatard's, you know, they're going for a three-peat, and they only allowed 12.5 points per game. They've got a running back with 2,000 yards, so I think you're going to see Bishop Chatard get their three-peat.
Okay. 4A.
4A, we have the Mishawaka Cavemen against the Cathedral Irish. The Irish are the third-ranked team in the Sagarin ratings. Mishawaka is 49. Again, a good run for Mishawaka. They're 11-3. Interesting sidebar on Mishawaka. Received no votes in the last regular season top 10 poll. But they're a very interesting team. They run the flex bone. If you watch Air Force play, it's basically the Air Force offense. They have a very good quarterback. Again, if you really love football, it's going to be interesting to watch. They have four-foot splits between their offensive linemen. They have and their offensive linemen are in four-point stances. So that's two hands down, and you don't see that very, very often. They also have had three comeback wins in the tournament. So they're an interesting team. Cathedral 9-5. They have the worst record in the matchups all weekend, but come off a difficult schedule. A big win against Columbus East last weekend, and Cathedral's going for a three-peat. So I think Cathedral size and speed very well could prevail in this game.
And Bill, you said your son and the team were up at Lucas practicing. It's got to be pretty exciting in your home right now.
Well, it is. It's special, and for all of us that have been involved in sports, and you've been there, it's they got up this morning, went to their meetings, watched film, took a bus down to Lucas Oil practice, and then Zach and a couple of his buddies are hanging out today, and you know, you can just kind of see them growing up and focusing, and they're going to go down to Lucas Oil tomorrow, and for all the past and present and future Irish, try and get that three-peat.
Awesome. 5A, what do we got there?
The last game of the day is Lawrence Central versus Snyder. Lawrence Central is the number one team in the state in the Sagarin ratings. Snyder's 12th. Lawrence Central's 14-0. Snyder's 14-0. Snyder's got two running backs that each have 1,000 yards. They average about 37 points a game. However, in the last two playoff games, they've given up 74 points. Lawrence Central's 51-12 in the last 5 years. They average 32 points a game. They only give up 10 points a game. As most of us know, Lawrence Central was in that state title game 2 years ago. So the kids that are going to be playing tomorrow night in that 5A championship game, most of those kids have been in Lucas Oil in a state championship game. I think Lawrence Central is going to prevail over Snyder. They're big and strong and fast, and they have an offensive lineman going to Ohio State. I think you'll see Lawrence Central the next 5A state champions before they head off to try and do the same thing next year in 6A.
Well, great stuff, Bill, and have a great weekend. You and your family just enjoy what Zach's going to experience. Thanks for being on with us. And we look forward to talking to you in the coming weeks.
All right, take care.
All right, thanks, Bill Somm. We're going to break. When we come back, we'll be wrapping up the show with Kurt Gutzel. You're listening to The Coach K and Joe Show.
Whether you're a small business or an individual, Idea Fusion Media can give you a presence on the web. They offer a range of web services, including design and upkeep. They can also help you with your domain name registration and hosting of your site. Are you a potential college athlete that needs a highlight film produced to send to college coaches? Idea Fusion Media can do that.
Would you like to have a DVD slideshow for that special graduate in your life for use at their graduation party? Idea Fusion Media can do that. What about a slideshow of you and your significant other for your wedding day? Idea Fusion Media can do that as well. Contact Idea Fusion Media at 827-8642 or visit their website at ideafusionmedia.com.
Does Barry Manilow know that you raid his wardrobe?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back from break, and we're with Kurt Guxell with our annual segment where we ended here. We're only on podcast right now, but Kurt, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Kurt, good to have you back, and we want to remind people, and they'll pick up with the podcast, that we can go past our live show, and we did today, Kurt, and I apologize, but we had Dienert from BTN, and we had a great talk with Scott Rowland, but it doesn't get any better unless it's wrapped up with a bow with Kurt Guxell.
Glad to hear it, Coach. What's going on today?
Hey, you were at the Jasper Harrison game, and Joe was, and myself, and high school basketball in the state has kicked off. You used to kick off really early. I remember when I first started coaching non-football schools, we could start as early as October 15th. But on Wednesday before Turkey Day, the Jasper Wildcats opened up in the beautiful Cabby O'Neill gym and took on Evansville Harrison, who has two or three, maybe more, potential, and when I say potential, prospective Division I players on their team. We know that the Duncan brothers, three of them, but mind you, are all getting interest on that level. Let's talk a little bit about what we saw. You were calling the game for WB. Was it WBC or were you on TV? I can't.
I was doing the TV game.
Okay, so you're doing 27. Okay, but let's just start with a little bit about what you saw and your thoughts.
Well, I mean, Harrison, they knew that they were going to be facing a very good team in Harrison, and they thought that they would get a lot out of that game because they played such a good team. In years past, they've opened with teams that haven't been as good, so they knew they were going to be challenged. A good, solid first half. I thought they took Harrison out of some things that they wanted to do and actually took a lead at the end of the half on a three by Nick Gilbert, but I just thought in the end, Harrison, with the good players that they had, were able to not just wear them down, but just play better basketball. It's not to say that Jasper won't improve and get better, but, I mean, that's a tall order to begin things to start a season.
Yeah, it really is, especially when you have the highly touted trio of brothers, Ernie, Stanley, and Everett Duncan. But Harrison also had some pretty good athletes and decent basketball players to go along with them. And Coach Spears, the five he started actually didn't get the things going the way he would have liked. It was when he made some substitutions that they actually got it going. Ernie Duncan didn't shoot. They really didn't shoot well in the first half, and Jasper did exactly what they needed to do. They kept it to limited possessions. They weren't running up and down the court. They weren't holding the ball. It was just a very controlled movement up and down the court, some soft pressure on Harrison so they couldn't get into a running game, put them in a position to have to work the ball a little bit. Harrison wanted to try to score quickly. They couldn't. Jasper did a good job of getting rebounds in that first half and then working it down on the other end. The one thing that I saw besides Harrison not shooting well, Jasper seemed to struggle shooting the ball the entire game outside of about 10 feet.
And you're right, and I think that was going to be one of the biggest question marks they had. Who was going to take that outside shot and, more importantly, hit that without Caleb Begley? But I think if you're John or you're Jason Albrand, you go back and look at that tape, there are several opportunities to get better looks at the basket, not just from the perimeter, but, the short corner areas, the flashes to the middle. And I think that will help their shooting percentages go up and just find things within their offense and maybe that you and I or somebody won't see from the stands. But if they go and analyze things, that will help them a little better too. So hopefully they'll get that, you know, straightened out. And it wouldn't hurt to hit an outside shot every now and then either. But I think they can find some places on the floor to get baskets.
Yeah, and the fact is that they're a very physical team. If anybody that was there, they're wide bodies, so they take up a lot of space. They're going to rebound if they block out. I thought in the second half, the quickness and speed kind of wore Jasper down a little bit, and we weren't getting the blockouts that we saw in the first half. But if they can rebound and kick that ball out, and I'm not talking about run and gun. I'm talking about transition, get the ball down the court, have a chance for those layups, ball reversal, get the easy shot. And, again, you made the great point, Kurt, the short corner, high-low, elbow, to block area, and they had several of those shots that they didn't convert on. And I just am a big believer that perimeter shooting will improve. Take good shots. It's not how many shots. It's how many good shots you take, and then you got to hit them. The one thing also I noticed in the second half, it got a little bit salty out there. I might use an old Navy word, a little salty out there. It seemed like, you know, Jasper's got to find their leader out on the floor to keep keep their composure against some of these teams that are on their schedule that are going to be very talented, very athletic, because they don't want to lose focus in a game and let it go from 8 points to 20 points quickly. And it can happen. I mean, I've been through it on both sides. I've had teams where it went to 20 quickly, and I have teams where we saw we're down 8, and the next thing we know we're down 20. So I thought there was maybe they're still searching for that on-court leadership.
Well, I think so, whether it become, you know, out of a point guard, which is usually the case in basketball, but just some older guys that have played the different sports, I think that'll help. And you don't want to get into that some of that chippiness because, A, that finds its way up to another team's scouting report, and they kind of get in your head, and they kind of want you to do that stuff. And, two, it's the officials, they talk around the area, you know, it sets yourself up for some bad things that way. But, yeah, I think they'll find a leader out of that group. They've had no problem finding leaders in the other sports with that group that just have to translate to the basketball court.
I love your comment that you just made as the officials talk. And officials do, you know, they're like fans. They're like coaches. They, you know, they pair up. They see each other in passing. They leave in one game and helping on another. Somebody subs in with a crew, and they do talk. And they do talk about the teams they're going to play and the coaches and, hey, watch this and watch that. This team likes to do this. So I think you make a very valid point that I don't think a lot of people think about. You start to build a reputation out there, and it's human nature, Kurt. We all have it. We come in and maybe have a little predisposition on what we might be looking for in a game. Let's jump over to football. We've got a big weekend, rivalry weekend, big games coming up. Before we talk Notre Dame-USC, let's talk the in-state rival Purdue and Indiana for the Oak and Bucket.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I always enjoy this game, and, you know, Purdue's got the bowl bid riding on it. We don't know the future of Danny Hope, and you've got some guys that maybe at Purdue have underperformed, and they're going to want to have big games on their senior day or their last game at Purdue. They've got a lot of good defenders, and they're going to want to play and play hard and get into that bowl mix. And for Indiana, you know, they would like to ruin Purdue's bowl bid, but they'd also like to finish on an upward note and win that ball game. So it's just a great game, and I hope for once that people go out and watch that game, you know, if you can, and you're, you know, the fans there. I mean, that Ross State Stadium, it needs to be packed for that game. It always used to be, just like it used to be at Bloomington, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
You know, Tom Dienert was on earlier with the Big Ten Network, and he's a Purdue graduate, obviously, but he did a nice job of breaking down what he thought were strengths and weaknesses on both sides. And I've got to ask you, I mean, you follow the sports all the time in football and the college level. I've got to ask you, is the fact that Indiana is, I hate to use the word one-dimensional, but they've shown it with the passing attack, is Purdue's defense good enough to stop the Indiana passing attack enough to where the Indiana offense or the Indiana defense and the Purdue offense, maybe even if Purdue has a little bit of the upper hand, but is Purdue's defense good enough to stop the Indiana passing attack?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Purdue's defense is good enough to stop the IU passing attack if they can stop the run. If they can control Steven Houston or some of those other running backs that Indiana has, but if Indiana can get 4 or 5 yards on first down, then it opens up the playbook for Coach Johns and Coach Wilson and the rest of that offensive staff. But, you know, Purdue's defense, and they're supposed to be, or they were supposed to be pretty good against the run. If they can stop the run and make Indiana, you know, one-dimensional, I think Purdue's defense is more than good enough to stop Indiana.
You know, you made a point earlier when we started this discussion on Purdue-IU, Danny Hope, you know, being a former coach, and you always have rumors and that, and I mean, is this the game-breaker contract-wise, job-wise for Danny Hope?
Oh, the problem for Danny Hope is I think it's some way, somehow, it's already been determined. And I don't think it's gonna end good no matter what happens. But you do win that last game, the guys that he brought there to play or were there when he got there, they're still playing. It's a good taste in your mouth, but I got an uneasy feeling that it's been decided. I mean, the Purdue people will know more about it than I would, but you know, that's sad. You know, you never see coaches in, you know, tenures like that, because you know, you're not just dealing with the head coach, you're dealing with coaches' families, and they have to go out and relocate, and the assistant coach has got to find jobs, and you know, and it's not easy coaching big time football. But you take that money, you take that position, you're AD, your fans, your administration would like for you to win every once in a while.
Yeah, and it is a lot more people than just the head coach. On the other side of the field, on the sideline, you've got Kevin Wilson, and I know Joe will say Illinois, Iowa, who else? But his name keeps popping up.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a little further down the list, but I've even heard his name come up with Tennessee. Does Kevin Wilson, is he out there now in a position where Indiana could lose him? Or is it just one of those things, hey, they're acknowledging that he is doing a good job at a difficult situation, and they put him on the lower end of the list?
Well, I think it's a combination of both, and I've heard that too with some different openings for Wilson, because he was, before he came to IU, he was highly sought after as an offensive coach, and they don't base things basically on records or how you've done in a certain situation. It's what, even with players, you do this, what can they do later on, potential, and sometimes that comes back to bite you, but potentially what could Kevin Wilson do? Or, you know, Sam Weiss was 2-9, and he goes to the NFL from Indiana.
Yeah, man, they knew
he had an NFL pedigree, and they knew, you know what I mean, and he went to some Super Bowls. You know, there's been a lot of bad coaches get better jobs in basketball, football, baseball, than what they've done in the past. I mean, will Kevin Wilson get the Tennessee job or the Arkansas job? I doubt it. But his name's out there, and it's not basically based on what he's done in Indiana, because at the end of the day, he's elevated him a little bit and really hasn't done a lot, but he potentially could take another program sometime in the future.
Well, that's big stuff, and this game has a lot of little things, underlying things running around with it.
I can't wait. It's good. I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I'm maybe crazy, but it's gonna be neat.
Okay. Well, the other leg on the turkey for this weekend, and Kurt, we started talking about this early in the year, and we were all talking, don't get too excited. A long way to go. You know, I talked about some of the prognosticators and analysts saying Notre Dame won't be relevant anymore. Here we've got it, USC, Notre Dame, storied rivalry, storied traditions. USC in a bit of a struggle, but what a perfect scenario to step up and bite the leg of the person walking over the top of you. As Notre Dame, they win this, they're playing for a national championship, number one in the country. Wow. As you look at this, does it get any better than that?
Oh, well, I don't think so, because, like you said, it's a 12-week process, and you're this close. I remember a few years ago, Rich Rodriguez had West Virginia within one game of going to the BCS title game. They were a 16, 17-point favorite against Pittsburgh in the backyard brawl. There's no way Pitt could beat them. Heck, if Dave Wannstedt was the coach of Pittsburgh, for Christ's sake, there's no way they could beat West Virginia. You know what? They knocked them off. West Virginia, no BCS title game. I'm not going to say that's going to happen with Notre Dame and USC, but that's potentially out there when you've got another prideful program on the other side of the field. To think USC, even with their backup quarterback who's playing for Barkley, is just going to go lay down against Notre Dame and let them into the BCS title game in that rivalry. I mean, you're mistaken if you think that. Whether they got the players and they got the scheme to beat Notre Dame, that's another story. But, you know, the Mayor Troy will show up.
Well, you know, defense better be the reason Notre Dame wins. You know, I think back to that Kansas State-Baylor game, and things didn't go the way Coach Snyder, a great coach for many years, was in a position to see a national championship, and deservedly so in his career. But here's Notre Dame, Brian Kelly, Manti Te'o. That defense has to come ready to, if they say nothing else, we're going to get this job done, and we're going to get us in the national championship game. And looming on the other side of that is potentially Alabama. You know, they're talking about if they can win, you know, they have to win two to get there. I mean, two games. But how about sitting there on national championship day with a Notre Dame-Alabama matchup?
Oh, that would be great. I wasn't interested in Notre Dame, Kansas State. Notre Dame, Oregon. I wanted Alabama in that mix, or Georgia to play Notre Dame, or whoever came out of the other side. That's what appeals to me as a big college football fan. And to have Notre Dame and Alabama, and you'll have that month-long wait and the month-long hype, that would be unbelievable for the sport. And as much as we cry and complain about a playoff, 4-team, 8-team, those two teams in the national championship game will be a big boost for college football. And it wouldn't get any more popular than that. And it would be great.
Well, I tell you what, I want it to happen. I want Notre Dame to be there. I don't care about the Notre Dame bashers and the haters. I like Notre Dame, and I want them to be there. And I want Alabama to be there. I'm not a huge Crimson Tide fan. In fact, I'm going to tell you right now, Alabama people, I don't really like the Crimson Tide, but I do want them to be there. And their head coach, he's been a part of a lot of big things. I want him to be there. I want this to be what so people can't question it. This would be as close to a big time, truest national championship game that you could get, and I hope it happens. And Kurt, before we end our segment, you know, you're the sports director, WBDC, you're out there, you're high school, you're watching college, you love the Celtics in the major league pro level. What do you got coming up? Where can our listeners hear you next? As far as games you'll be calling?
We'll start the boys basketball next Friday. I'll have Northeast Du Bois and a team very close and dear to your heart in years gone by, Washington Catholic, up at the Coliseum at Northeast Du Bois. Terry Friedman does a great job with the Chiefs. They've got a lot of talented players, and they're big and physical, kind of like those Du Bois teams in the past. They'll be a big-time tournament a contender come March in there. Class, if you will. I hate saying that, but that's the reality of it, but they will. And then on Saturday, Southridge opens with Gibson Southern. The Raiders got a lot of pieces back. They've got a veteran team. They've got a 6'7 player in Chad O'Brien. His uncle played on the 86 state championship game. Or actually, his father played in the 86, 85. Ted O'Brien, it's his son. And uncle's the JV coach at Southridge, Steve Ruff. That's where I was getting the uncle thing. But they've got Ben Weber, one of the better athletes in southwestern Indiana. He's their two guard. They've got a talented point guard in Trey Reese. His dad, Dave, played. And
they've
got some big kids.
I remember Dave played against him.
They've got Cody Thompson. He was a high jump participant in the state finals last year, track. He's big inside. They've got some bench players. So they play a Gibson Southern team with a lot of good athletes that played on that football team. So that's, you know, Southridge Gibson next Saturday. That's how I start my season.
Well, that's great because we'll be able to get together before that game, and we'll have some more time to break down the teams in Du Bois County and Pike Central.
Well,
before we go, you know, we had Scott on, And a question just came in a little late, right when we ended the Scott Rowland segment, and the guy, his name's Matt, and he asked, ask Scott, who is the tougher coach to play for, Coach K or Tony La Russa? Well, I'm going to have to hold on to that question and ask Scott the next time I see him. And, Kurt, I'll tell you what, I don't even want him to answer the question because, you know, Scott, he's quick with his wit. I can imagine what he would have come back on. But it was a good show today. It was a good show today, and thanks for being with us. And we just had a lot of fun talking a lot of sports today, and I look forward to your call of the Southridge games and other games around the area. And I know that you're a Celtics man. Real quickly, anything good or even bad, give me a little shout-out about your Celtics.
Well, they thought they were going to better themselves, letting a guy like Ray Allen go and, you know, get an influx of younger guys. They've got Courtney Lee, who played at Western and also out of Indianapolis at a two-guard. But they still got guys like Garnett and Paul Pierce that continue to do it. Will they be able to do it for 84 games? Who knows? But it's just a different type of team without Ray Allen there, but they do have some talent. And if you're a basketball fan, to watch Rajon Rondo play the point guard spot and get people involved and make the passes and run the team, we talk about a leader on the floor, that guy's unbelievable. So that's real neat. And, Coach, I want to say one more thing,
sure,
going back to high school, if I could. And
sure,
we talked about this, all those guys got together the other night, and the Jasper Harrison game, or the team that you root for, the team that you patronize or your kids went to, go out and watch some high school basketball, because as a high school basketball fan, I'm not going to tell you how to spend your money or what to do, but if you got an opportunity to go watch a game, if you've enjoyed games in the past, go out and watch high school basketball, because I don't like seeing empty gyms, and these guys work hard, the coaches work hard, and it's just a lot of fun for the amount of pleasure you get or the amount of entertainment you get for what you pay. I mean, there's no reason that Cabby O'Neill Gymnasium should not be packed. It's a limited seating capacity. And like the other night against Harrison, it's a season opener. You know, Harrison's got three Division I basketball players. Jasper, they may have three or four Division I athletes that play other sports on that squad. So go out, no matter what team you root for, go out and watch some games.
I expected to go up there and stand because I thought it would be packed, and it was half full, and it was disappointing.
Well, I don't know if there's, you know, in some places you hear there's disconnect or there's no buzz or whatever, but I don't know what the reason for that is. And I know a lot of times it kicks in after the holidays and you get poor tournament time, or in a lot of places, and I hate to go down to the least common denominator, fans will show up if you win the games or if you have a good program. Or I'm not saying this is the case in this place or that place, but it's people want to put it on the class basketball, they want to put it on this or that. But if you've got a good team and your kids play hard and they do the right things, people still come to games. So I dismiss a lot of that class basketball talk or this or that and the other. I just think that if you got a good winning program or a good winning team, or you play a good brand of basketball, or, you know, you got likable kids or whatever, you'll go. But to find out if you like it or not, you need to go initially. And I think once you leave, no matter who you follow, that you'll have a lot of fun going to these games.
Well, if you say you're a good community guy, if you say you're a good community guy, be a good community person and come out and be a part of something that helps the community. But more importantly, if you're a dad, a mom, an older brother, get your little siblings, get your little son and daughter. That's a great hour and a half, 2 hours to spend together, maybe go grab a hamburger afterwards and talk about it, and build memories and relationships and give them something to connect to more than a video game or something video on MTV. Get them something to connect to say, man, I want his number. I want that number. I mean, Slick Weber said it best. Man, my dad takes me to this game. You're bonding right there. We go in, I never forgot it. And now he's continuing to support and give back to his community. So people, Kurt is right. Get out there. Get off your duffs and get out there.
Yeah, I'd always sound like some, you know, old-fashioned type of, but I mean, I guess I'm passionate about it because I'm involved in it, you know, in a different way than maybe some of the coaches or administrators or even the players. But you know, it's still really neat to. And we could talk on another show, or have our own show about, you know, why the attendance has declined. And, you know, I know, as you should know as a parent, your kids are going every which way Monday through Thursday, and maybe on Friday or Saturday, you're done for the week, you know. But
yeah,
there's just a lot of different factors, and we could talk as the season goes along. But I just wanted to bring that up because, you know, it was a season opener, and I was kind of excited to call the game on WJTS, and, you know, I was hoping that there would be, you know, some more buzz and more excitement in the gym. And, you know, hopefully that'll continue or we get it going here no matter what team you follow as the season progresses.
Well, as a former coach and a former player, I played in a lot of gyms that had a big crowd, and it always makes a difference regardless. And you know, I don't buy this after the holiday stuff. Why aren't you spending time as a family before or during? Why are you going after it? It doesn't make any sense. Well, that's our rant, and we're allowed to do that because it's our show and we can. Hey, Kurt, thanks for being with us again, and we appreciate all the listeners. I know we had a big audience today on the live show, and I'm sure we'll have a big numbers on the podcast. So, folks, thanks for listening, and we're not going to hold back. We'll probably get a little bit more honest as we go on with shows, but thanks for being with us, Kurt. I certainly appreciate it.
All right, let's have one of those impromptu post-game meetings in the near future.
We'll do it soon. It was a lot of fun. Hey, folks, thanks for joining us. We're going to say goodbye for this Friday. We'll see you next Friday on the Coach K and Joe Show.